Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are talking about porn addiction. The reason I want to talk about porn addiction is because I feel like you guys are addicted to porn and you guys don't want to talk about it. And I also feel like you guys play too much. You guys play too much. Especially this generation of ours, we are playing too much. Everything is just, apparently it's just the way to go. We can find healthier ways to do it. And we can do better. And. Ooh, ha, guys, why we are just birthing an entire pandemic, of unstable people. So, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're talking about porn addiction. The reason that we're talking about porn addiction is because I want us to bring it to the surface. I want us to talk about the signs of porn addiction. I want us to talk about what it is. And in case you have no idea what porn addiction is, it is basically the addiction of watching other people have coitus. Whether they are actors, I don't know how you can be an actor, but okay. You're not just a doer like that. But anyways, it's an actor. It's a sex actor. And it is being addicted to watching it. Whether you are watching it through people's windows, or you're watching it through your phone or your computer, or you're using any chance you can get to watch it one way or another, just to see it. So, yeah. Sometimes porn addiction can also be there by sound, right? So people can talk to you, talk dirty to me, then you become addicted to it. And everything in this world is addictive. All of it is addictive. It just depends on how you fly through the situation, isn't it? So we are talking about the top 10, signs of porn addiction. And this is just going to be our first topic for the evening. So what we're going to do this evening is we're going to have a series of conversations, at least three conversations that we're going to be having. And you know how we do on our Fridays. We invite other people to talk to us and tell us about their experiences. And in these experiences, we learn a thing or two. And when we learn the things that we want to learn, then we can at least walk away knowing a little something. So what else could be considered as porn addiction? So maybe we can say it's using pornographic material. So sometimes you just want to, masturbate. So maybe we can talk about masturbation. So masturbation is self-pleasure. Self-pleasure is doing yourself. Now, this, I think that it is, when done in moderation, it is so much better than you going to get a fix from Sarah, and then Sarah is going to leave you with a young HIV and an STD and a whatever DD. Yeah, it is a little bit better. I think that it's a bit better than actually having coitus with random people, because you can trust where your hand has been. You can trust where your other body parts have been. So basically, the addiction is now not necessarily addiction to masturbation, but it could be the addiction to the content that gets you riled up. It's adult content today, ladies and gentlemen. It's adult content, but we are bringing it out to the open because, guys, if it's not me that's going to tell you, who is going to tell you if it's not me? Am I not your mom? I'm your mom. I'm supposed to tell you these things so that when you are there, busting nuts, at least you know you got a problem. At least you know that you need help. So pornographic material is like naked pictures of girls or naked pictures of guys, naked pictures of their body parts. Hey, that's pornographic material. And pornographic material could be pictures, it could be videos, it could be sounds, it could be toys, right? And then there's also chat rooms, for example. Now these chat rooms out there, for you that is already addicted and you are like, oh, but is there not another outlet? Because you've exhausted all of the outlets. You're king of Tinder, Okay. So there are chat rooms as well where people just go there and they are literally just talking about getting down and dirty and sex lines in excess. So there, in other countries, I don't know now about this. No, I don't think there's anything here because I would have heard about it. You know, people like to tell me things, especially the things that are not decent. They like to tell me. It's like a calling for them because I have to tell matriarch. So what happens is like you call this line where you pay maybe like $50 and the girl is on the other side like, good morning, daddy. I get to win, like, and then she does those things. And then you are like riled up and you are like busting and that is it. And then the next thing that could most probably give you an alarming signal would be excessive masturbation. So you masturbate a lot. And I'm talking about like you are the type of person that goes home quickly. There was a minister that was he fired? That was caught masturbating in his office in this Windhoek city of ours a couple of years back. If it's not a couple of years back, it's over a decade ago. He was caught masturbating and everyone in his office was like, it's not even his first time, my dear. Sometimes we just pretend we cannot hear him inside there. And I'm like, oh, okay. Weird. But okay. And it's if you do it a lot. And now you might be thinking that I don't do it a lot. I just do it once every 10 minutes. Yeah, that's not good. You can do it once. You can do it twice a week, three times a week. But it's in moderation, right? And treatment of sexual partners as objects. So the problem that we have in contemporary times, especially when it comes to our love lives as human beings, is that we have this artificial idea of what coitus should look like because we have access to things that feed the imagination. We have access to information that feeds the imagination. And that access to the information that feeds the imagination is exactly what makes us, right? Like, rise our expectations, especially of our partners. Because now, if you see a Mandingo championship somewhere with Miss Big Booty Judy, and you and I, you are not Big Booty something, and then you also, there's no Mandingo, you have a tendency, or people have a tendency to think that their partners are not fulfilling. And also to start expecting your partner to do the things that you see in the content that you watch. Now, this content that you watch could be according to your liking because the World Wide Web is such it's an interesting place. It's such an interesting place because, there is everything. There's bestiology, there's water, there's people, and the worst part is that even pedophilia, and everybody has their own side of the internet. Even the people that like rape porn, it's there, all of it is there. And in this is why I say that when you watch too much of it, when you are exposed to too much content like this, our expectations of our partners sexually is very high. And we forget often that the people that are in the films, would we say films, not movies, in the films that we watch, right? These are paid actors. These are people that are paid to be uncomfortable or to be comfortable or to do this particular act or to train themselves through this particular act. You understand? They went for auditions just like anybody else and they got the job. You understand? So this is a trained professional. It's like you saying that you can beat The Rock because, you know, you've watched WWE a couple of times. It doesn't mean that because you are not a professional pretend wrestler. I say pretend because how? Is it not pretending that one? It is more pretending if we are saying, which, so the reason that we need to have a little introspection when it comes to our own sexuality is because many of us are following skirts and following trousers because we have no idea what exactly it is that we want and what triggered it. And now at the end of the day, we are stuck with, situations that we can't necessarily get out of. So we're going to be talking about the 10 signs that you are a porn addict. In the world of behavioral addiction, porn addiction tends to be misunderstood. This is not only continuous to stigma. This is not only because of stigma. This addiction, this is not only because of the stigmatization that comes from this addiction, but also it makes them difficult to spot. We can't spot addicts of or porn addicts just like that. Maybe we can spot people that are addicted to sniffing paint. You know, like we can spot them with their little thingy of paint. We can spot the people that are addicted to eating sand. We can spot them, you understand. But with porn addicts, we can't spot them. Whether or not behavioral addiction such as porn addiction are actual addictions is highly debatable in the psychiatric and treatment community. While some of these addictions like gambling addiction are much more accepted than others. You see, this is why I spoke about stigma, because even in bad things, we are stigmatizing others. So we are saying that porn addiction is not a real addiction, okay? It's not. It's not a real addiction, and you should just leave our class of addicts because, yeah, this is our thing. Imagine. The gamblers are saying, we are real addicts. The alcoholics are like, we are real addicts. This porn addiction thinks it's not a real addiction, but it is. All right. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the number in studio is 0832-888-401. That is the number in studio in case you would like to call. And please don't make a missed call because vele, I personally can't see your number. All righty. Okay, while some addictions like gambling are much more accepted than others, such as sex addiction. For example, there is still a great deal of controversy from medical professionals on where addictions end and compulsion begins. Because if you are compelled to it, if you cannot have self-control, right? Where do we draw the line between this person is an addict and this person just lacks self-control? Regardless, there are people suffering. So whether it is an addiction or a compulsion, you should also still seek help. One of the most reported addictions in porn addiction or feeling a compulsion to watch porn and not being able to stop, like any addiction, though there are signs that you may be having a problem. If you are wondering whether excessive pornography use has reached the level of addiction, it is important for you to watch out for these 10 signs. So we're going to start with these 10 signs and then we're going to go into our usual Friday seminars where we have them, have conversations with us and we listen. We listen, we don't judge and we feel empowered. Okay. So what is the first sign that you are addicted to porn? One, you can't stop. Like, what do you mean I can't stop? Now, people would say that, okay, after you are done, after the finish, after the ejaculation, right? One would say that, yeah, I can stop. Like, when I was done, I finished and I put the computer or the cell phone down and I stopped. No, we're talking about you can't stop because next time the craving comes about, you go and watch again. You are unable to stop using or viewing pornography despite trying to do so. If you can't stop, you may notice that you are spending more and more time on the internet despite others attempt to communicate with you. You might even have a real life girlfriend or a real life boyfriend that you could actually spend time with, but you spend more time on the porn sites, on the internet, and that is an indicator that you might have a problem. I'm no doctor, and I'm not saying that, yeah, you are an addict, you are addicted to pornography. I'm just saying, let's look through these signs and find ways, man, to see if we can work through it. And then number two, you want more. 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 You may experience cravings to view more or feel cravings if you have gone without porn for any amount of time. You may find yourself sneaking away from your partner to another room. It's impossible that you will give an excuse or get defensive when questioned about your behavior. When you start hiding it, then it's an addiction. When you start hiding it, when you start making it a secret, when it starts becoming a secret, it's an addiction. When you are sneaking away from the real life pum pum to go and watch imaginary pum pum, it's an addiction. Because how do you explain it, Kuja? No, I'm just going into the other room to just go and watch my things. Now, what are you watching and why are you watching it? If you are having a real life person that is here and you are saying that I don't want to be around this person, I want to go and eat the nena myself. And also, this conversation is important, especially to all of us. It's important because we have a tendency of thinking that these things are far away from us. We are mothers and fathers to children that are growing. And we think that they will never fall into these traps. Why? Because we are such great parents. We are phenomenal matriarch. There's no way our children could ever do this. Yeah, I don't think that. So that's number two, you want more. So after an amount of time, you start craving for it, and then you start looking for it, and then you go and get it. So you might just take your phone and then just go and beat your meat in the next room. And it could be that you're not even beating your meat, you're just watching it because you like it. Or you're watching it and you just give yourself blue balls. Number three, you've lost time. You may lose large periods of time to viewing porn, wasting most of the day without accomplishing anything. You could notice that you've become the lethargic and haven't accomplished much as of late. You might seem like you don't care or that you are very uninterested in anything else apart from porn. So you don't really bath, you don't really go out, you don't really socialize, you don't really work on anything. You're not doing anything productive. Most of the time you spend like hours on end, hours and hours and hours. And you might not be looking at it from the perspective of hours, because if you're looking at a clip is most probably like 5 minutes or so. But just like any other addiction, right? It grows. So you started with 5 minute clips and now you are at 20 minute clips and now you are at 2 hour clips and now you are at 3 hour clips. You are missing matriarchs 3 hours just to go and be watching your things in a basement somewhere. And you can't account for that time. That time is gone, but you can't really say that, oh no, this is what I did. You know, in the 3 hours that I did, I went to work and I spoke about pornography. I also, read through my notes and this is what I did. You can't account for that because your whole entire time you've just been watching. You've just been watching and you've just been apparently enjoying yourself. And it could look, especially from outsiders, it could look like you don't have an interest, right, in what is being discussed. You don't have an interest in anything apart from whatever you do on that phone. And it's not every day that people see that you're actually watching porn, because cell phones are private. You can always just say, no, I'm going to take this call. And you are just inside there, and you are pretending to be on a call, but you're watching whatever you're watching. So yeah. And then, this is for the senior citizens, right? Not for the senior citizens like that, but for the grown-ups. Number four is, you've lost interest in sex. If you're addicted to porn, you'll likely lose interest in real sex. Not only that, but you may find your partner less attractive than you did before. You might become unresponsive to romantic advances from your partner. This can cause your partner to view you as distant or even uninterested when they try to engage with you sexually. You may require more stimulation than you had previously needed in order to become aroused. So now it is a whole issue. So I know for a fact that there are so many senior men. When I say senior men, I mean it from 35 and above, right? Senior. 35 and above. There's so many senior men that are not actually having coitus with their wives in the house. And part of the problem is that he's not getting aroused. Now, if he's not getting aroused, what's the problem? The problem is that he watches too much porn. He watches too much porn, and now he doesn't find you attractive, and he doesn't get stimulated quickly. So he used to be a person that you can just one braise like that and we are good to go. Let's go to the room. Or it could have just been just like this by his ear and we are good to go. But now it's like you have to work 10 times harder to get him to at point A. And it's just because his mind is so fixated on pornography. And that is why he finds you less attractive. Because remember that porn stars are amazing looking, guys. Porn stars go to the gym. Porn stars are doing makeup. Porn stars have BBWs. Porn stars have nice clean skin. Zero acne. Porn stars have nice arched backs. And then you are having your rolls here. So if he is exposed to us, to that excessively, I'm telling you, sis, that is the problem. The problem is that he has seen too many fine things on the screen, and now when he looks at you, he sees a frog. And also for the women that do masturbate, right? It is the same for you. So you can't say, my man is just not. No, it's not just my man is just not. It is actually that you have exposed yourself too much to fictional characters. To fictional characters, and now your husband with his one peg and, you know, the flat bum, but very nice face and very good height. Yeah, that guy. He's no longer attractive, because what you see in pornography is basically tall, dark, and handsome. Yeah? It must be like a speed hump. It must be like a speed hump in Ondangwa. Yeah? Or his stomach must be like those speed humps in Ondangwa. You understand? Or he must be light in complexion and beautiful and with long hair and what. And then you watch your husband. You guys are aging together. He's balding. Yeah. He even snores. It's just not attractive. Then he wears his bendy, like a bendy guy. And it's just, and then there it's completely different to what you're receiving here at home. And you ask yourself why you're not attracted to him anymore. It's because you have exposed yourself tremendously to fictional characters that are not the representation of what you are having here. The reason that you are not aroused by the physical touch is not because of the build. It's not because of the kids. It's not because you are tired. It's not because of anything like that. Because if you were, you wouldn't be watching porn. The fact that you're watching porn means that you have time. So it is not that life is hectic and you have headaches. No, it is just that you are addicted to porn. And part of the signs that you are addicted to porn is that you lose sexual interest in your partner because your partner does not fit the bill. Are we together? Your partner does not fit the bill. He does not look like the porn stars. Just like your wife does not fit the bill. She does not look like the porn stars. She's not having a shaven shandy. Yeah? She's not having a waxed shandy. She's not having breasts that are solid and up here because they had a boob job. Because she birthed 5 kids for you. So she's not having a nipple ring. She's not having these exciting things that you see inside this, movies or these films. So that's the problem. And just before we go for our break, ladies and gentlemen, we have number 5. You're more demanding. Yeah. This is the one I wanted to talk about. You see these guys that say things like, yeah. Ever since we got married, she's not even tuning herself anymore. And it's, and even in bed, she's so boring. It could be that these particular people have porn addiction. Because if you become too demanding, could I tell you tomorrow I want you to flip over and jump in the sky and sit on it. Then I want you to spit on it and then I want you to turn around like this. He wants to live out the fantasies that he sees in porn movies with you, but you are not flexible and you're not the girl. Just the same as all of a sudden that is sex life is so boring and you just wish he could do things like, go down because you saw some guy eating pum pum on the movies.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Good evening, porn stars. How you doing? Good evening, recovering addicts. How you doing? Good evening, you demanding, beautiful masterpieces. How are you guys doing? Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings. We are having adult content today because we need to have adult content because you guys are addicted to sex. You guys are addicted to porn. You guys are not, you guys are addicted to eating paper. Like, I don't get it. You guys are addicted to eating sex. I don't get it. But then again, what is an ex-alcoholic? No, I don't know nothing, right? I have my own demons, darling. So, number 5. So, we're going down a checklist that is giving us the symptoms and the signs of porn addiction. And we said that number 5 is that your partner becomes more demanding. So, you, as the partner that is addicted, you become more demanding. A porn addiction may cause you to develop some unrealistic ideas about sex. You might become more demanding in the bedroom. Find yourself easily frustrated or begin alienating your partner. All factors that can end up hurting one and hurting the relationship and the health of the relationship. When this happens, your partner can start to feel physically and emotionally uncomfortable or distant or even unattractive. You get it. So now you want your say now your kink is anime, right? Anime like maybe these Japanese girls, yeah, these Japanese girls having coitus with a monster that is coming from where piercing through her until her mouth. Maybe that's your thing. So in which universe can your wife be anime? Never, right? She can never be anime. So let's figure out the problems together and then we'll talk about it. But before we go to number six, I want you guys to marinate on the previous. Yeah. So we spoke about number one, you can't stop. Number two, you want more. Number three, you've lost time, meaning that there's time that is unaccounted for because you've just spent it watching porn. And number four, you've lost interest in coitus, in physical coitus. You don't want to be having that. And then number five is you become demanding. You are more demanding than you should have been. But before we run off with the rest of our symptoms, right? Maybe we need to hear from somebody on how to quit porn. And this is a deep clean, and this is from a life coach. His name is somebody. His name is somebody, but we are going to listen and we are going to judge. Yes, because as we judge, we listen and then we judge and then we scrutinize and then we understand and then we go back to our symptoms and then we recap on our symptoms so that we can find the loopholes if there are any loopholes and we continue. So ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House, the house that I play for, my home, my creme de la creme, we do not claim ownership of any of these clips. We do not claim ownership of any of the audios that we play here on Pulling Heartstrings. We do not claim ownership. This is strictly just for illustration purposes. It's just like me using your picture, to show kucha. This is how an ugly person looks. We are just using it just like that. Oh, don't I miss it.
Well, the temptation started for me in the seventh grade. And just to give you context, in case you forget what a seventh grader looks like, this was me in the seventh grade. Very proud that I was on the all-star team, but just a little kid asked to babysit for a neighbor. And it was my first official babysitting job. And I was so excited to take care of the kids. I was going to be a great babysitter and was excited beyond measure, but had no idea how excited I would be when I noticed that my neighbors had a giant stack of Playboy magazines. We're not talking about like just 12 January, February, March, April, but like 2 years of 12 months. A Playboy magazine sitting right out on the coffee table in plain view. And I know you look at me as a man of God, but I need to tell you that long before I was a pastor, I used to just be a boy. And I remember the feeling and the rush of sexual excitement, because just a few feet away from me were pages and pages of women without shirts or bras, if I can say that. And that was the only time I had ever had access to it, with the exception of in the fifth grade when my friend found it, or National Geographic, which didn't really count, or Barbie dolls that I would occasionally strip down. But we don't want to talk about that because that's really gross, and I'm sorry I even said that out loud. But on the spot, and in that moment, I just changed my babysitting strategy, which is, kids, you're going to be going to bed a little earlier tonight. And I spent the next 2 or 3 hours just flipping page by page through the whole stack. And what I felt was confusing, because I'll be honest, I mean, there was like this buzz and this hit and this thrill and kind of waves of confusing sexual energy to a little boy, followed by deep guilt and shame and remorse and embarrassment. I felt dirty and just hated that I did that. If you can relate to what I just said, you're not alone. Even if you're a Christian, you're not alone. In fact, the studies today show that this is a growing problem by the minute. And not just like when I was growing up, I thought it was a man issue, and it is a man issue, but it's also increasingly becoming an issue for females as well. And not just men and not just women, but Christian men and Christian women. In fact, one study shows that about 64% of Christian men and about 15% of Christian women admit to viewing porn monthly. Maybe not daily, but at least once a month. How many of you are between 18 and 30 years of age? You can just raise up your hands. For those of you that are, and if you're a man, the odds of looking go way, way up. 79% of men between 18 and 30 years of age admit to viewing porn monthly. When I was a kid, you had to find a stack of magazines. The rules have changed because now you got porn in your pocket. Meaning anywhere, anytime, all day long, the majority of the world is just a click or two away from anything they'd ever want to see or everything they should never, ever see. And it raises the question, is purity even possible? And I want to talk to you today and tell you, not only is it possible, but it is God's will. And the title for today's message is How to Quit Porn. Would you pray with me today? Father, we ask that by the power of your Spirit and the truth of your word, you would do, God, what only you can do. Purify our hearts and our minds that we could love you and love others as you love us. God, purify us, we pray in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen. 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 Are you ready for the word today?
Yes.
We're going to start today in the New Testament in the book of James. And I want to show you in James chapter 1, verses 13 through 15, some interesting verses. James told us this, whenever we're tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. In other words, like, God didn't put that stack of Playboys in front of me. If you agree, say amen. Do you agree? Amen. God is not tempting us because God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. I was dragged away by a very evil desire in me, and I was enticed. In fact, the word in the Greek that's translated as enticed is a fishing term that means to lure by using bait. And that's what our spiritual enemy does. Our enemy knows where we're weak and where we're vulnerable, and will put some kind of temptation, some kind of trap, some kind of bait in front of us. Scripture goes on to say, then after that desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And that's what happened to me. I want to look. There's a temptation. I looked. I sinned. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. To death. To death. Sin, when full blown, kills and destroys. And that's what our spiritual enemy wants to do. He wants to bait us. If you've ever been fishing, you might have used a worm or you might have used a lure or whatever. And the little fishy looks on and goes, that looks good. Ooh! Worm food. Spitty thing. And the little fishy swims over to it. You know, I'm sorry. I won't do that in the next service. But the fishy swims over to it and takes it. And the bait then captures the fish and ends up in death. And this is what your spiritual enemy does. He gives you a temptation, a little bit of bait. And before you take the bait, the devil tells you, it's no big deal. It's just a little spinny thing. It's
no big deal. It's just an itty bitty little thing. Now, the reason that I wanted you guys to listen to that was strictly for the age context. You see, when somebody is in grade 7, somebody that's in grade 7 is what, 13 years old or 14, turning 14 maybe? I don't know. They're 13. They're 13 years old and you're thinking that, no, my child could never. My child is a baby. My child babysits the other babies. Mara, the content that we put out there. Hey, a whole stack of Playboy magazines. Now, if you guys remember the older generation, the me generation, if you guys remember the Playbook, the Playboy magazines, they had girls. They had girls in bikinis. What is his name? Playboy guy. Yeah, the senior guy with so many chicks, right? And it was pictures upon pictures upon pictures upon pictures upon pictures. Now, that That is the form of porn. But we are looking at age here, and we are trying to dissect, why our children are most now growing, and they are curious. They are curious not just about themselves, but they are curious about the opposite gender. They are curious to see. And now it is followed by guilt, right? And this guilt and this shame and this embarrassment of what they did, because they went through the pages and the pages and the pages and the pages. And one of the elements is that one could not stop. Yeah, until all of them were finished and could not stop and wasted a large amount of time. Because there is something that he says here, that he says it was his first babysitting job, and he wanted to be the best babysitter ever. So what he wanted to do was get there, play games with the kids, you know, clean up after them, clean up their home, and, you know, get his money. The kids go to bed. And then when he got there and he saw the magazines, he's like, yeah, guys, we're going to go to bed early. So he's not even fulfilling his task that he's doing. And this is a child that is in grade 7. He's not fulfilling his task that he went there to do anymore. And how many of us are not fulfilling our tasks because we're just looking at naked women? And I feel that in the age of the internet, right? The age of the internet is filled with so much pornographic content that we don't even realize it's pornographic, because apparently we're just showing off our bikinis, or we're just showing off our abs, or we're just showing off our, I don't know, triceps, those little things that come there, you know, at the groin or at the stomach. Hey, that one, Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. And it's just taking a picture. But is that not pornographic content? Especially for parents that have children that are on the internet. Are we not breeding ground? Are we not in the breeding ground of porn addiction? And we wonder why our children are so glued to the phone. They want to be alone. They seek privacy, right? And this is Kanti. Most probably what they're doing, they're looking at naked women, they're looking at naked men, they're looking at hot guys. And we don't even know what the definition of hot is anymore, because, I mean, the world has moved. Back in the day for us, it was a guy on a horse. It was a guy on a horse, that guy was hot. Hey, but okay. So ladies and gentlemen, for illustration purposes, we continue, we move.
Sharing our hardships moves us through shame and into healing, both for ourselves and others. About a year ago, I'm sitting in my conference room with a couple of my employees, and one of them asks me, Ellie, what's your goal? Do you mean my goal for this meeting, I asked? He says, no, I'm talking about your 10-year goal. I looked him straight in the eye, and I said, my number one goal is to never watch porn again. Both of them were shocked. I'm sure it wasn't the response they were expecting. The first one kind of mumbled something like, is porn really that bad? When I turned to look at the other guy, his face went from shock to judgment, then to disgust, almost as if to say, what's wrong with you? What sort of pervert are you? How much porn must you have watched for your number one goal to be to never watch porn again? Why is there so much shame around porn addiction? I mean, anyone who understands addiction understands that shame and addiction are inseparable. But if we were to stack the different addictions and rate the one that has the most shame, certainly we'd put sex addiction and include it in that porn addiction at the top. All of us, certainly me, I've been at dinner and a friend would say, hey, I'm not drinking anymore. Others would say, I don't gamble anymore. But I haven't met one person who publicly acknowledges the fact that they're sober from porn and or sex addiction. So now you guys have met someone. Fortunately, you know, the thing about shame is that shame is much bigger than addiction. According to some psychologists, shame is the single biggest cause of most of our psychological problems. So it's certainly an issue that's worth addressing. And if there's an idea that can make a dent in the amount of shame we feel, certainly it's an idea worth spreading. Fortunately, there are many subjects that were once steeped in shame and stigma, and today are much less so. Domestic violence, even HIV, child sex abuse, and many others. And what I've seen, and I think you'll see if you look at it, is for a conversation to change, it needs people to share their stories. So we're able to humanize people who once had this issue. Take Ryan White. Many of you may know Ryan White, who's a 14-year-old kid living in Kokomo, Indiana, who got HIV from a blood transfusion. He completely shattered the stigma of what we thought someone who had HIV was. 14-year-old kid who got it from a blood transfusion, that's not what we thought. The bill that Congress passed that funds the help, awareness around AIDS is actually called the Ryan White Cure Act. And it's those personal stories that really allow us to change conversations and change stigma. In my own life, several weeks ago, you know, I grew up Jewish and Orthodox, and I know many rabbis. Until a few weeks ago, I didn't know of one who publicly acknowledged being sexually abused as a child. And several weeks ago, there was an article in a newspaper in Utah where a rabbi publicly acknowledged being abused over a 10-year period by his nanny. He credited his own willingness to step forward to hearing Ali Reisman, the Olympic gymnast who testified against her abuser in court, to him doing the same. Several weeks later, the second rabbi I know stepped forward. The rabbi in Utah was invited to speak on a podcast, and his host, a rabbi in Brooklyn, became the second rabbi I know who publicly acknowledged being sexually abused. Sharing stories changes the conversation. Porn kicked my ass. But before I tell you how I met porn, let me bring you back to who I was. I grew up one of nine children in a small community in Brooklyn, New York. From a very young age, I felt a lot of fear. I felt on edge. Something was going to go wrong always. The one place I didn't feel this way, in the home of my grandmother. As soon as I stepped through the threshold of her apartment, it just seemed like the noise stopped. I wasn't worried about something else happening. I was just present. And I looked forward to those times we went to her home. Unfortunately, over the years, she grew ill. And our visits to her home became less and less frequent, as did my feeling of safety. The very next time I remember feeling safe again was when an older boy in the community, 5 or 6 years older than I was, took a lot of interest in me. He took me to baseball games, took me to synagogue, he taught me to play computer games. And one day he brought me into his bedroom, locked the door, and used my 8-year-old body to bring himself to orgasm. And in that day again, my safety was shattered. The next time I remember feeling of safety, that feeling that I was once again in my grandma's home. So I was sitting on my couch and I heard a clink in the mailbox. Stuff were delivered. I ran over and I saw a catalog with a picture of a nice looking woman on it. So I flipped through it and I made my way to the lingerie section. And as soon as I saw those pictures, I just felt this peace come over me. I was present. I was completely there. And through this magic mailbox came all sorts of things. It became somewhat of an obsession of mine to check the mail. One day, Victoria shared her secret with me right through that mailbox. And then the highlight of my year became, some of you may know this, the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. So much peace, so much safety. But despite the fact that I felt good when I was engaged in viewing these catalogs, I felt really bad afterwards. I felt like I was doing something wrong. And I wanted to stop. And I promised myself that every year for my birthday, I promised myself, I'm done. I'm done watching porn. And every year on my birthday, I broke my promise to myself. And it's not because I wasn't committed. I really, really wanted to. As a matter of fact, when I was 22 years old, I woke up one morning with an irritated eye. It was bothering me pretty badly. So I made an appointment at the eye doctor and I went to Mount Sinai Medical Center on Miami Beach. When I sat down in the chair and the doctor rolled over his stool and looked at my eyes through his machine, a look of concern came over his face. He said, Ellie, you have a corneal ulcer. I've looked at your chart. You're allergic to some antibiotics. Ulcers are notoriously resistant to antibiotics. That's not a good thing. They can cause blindness. What I'm going to need from you is to come to my office every single day for the next 14 days so we can monitor how your eye, how the ulcer is reacting to the antibiotics. Is treatment working? I left his office in sheer terror. I was convinced I was losing my eyesight, and I was further convinced that the reason I was losing my eyesight was because I was misusing my eyes. I was watching way too much porn. In that moment, I made a deal. I made a commitment with the universe, with God, with karma, with whoever had this power, that if somehow, some way, this ulcer would clear up, I would never watch porn again. The second day, I returned to the doctor, no improvement. When I left his office, my commitment was that much stronger, that much more firm. I was never going to watch porn again if this ulcer would clear up. The third day, I came back to the doctor. He looked at me and he said, I got good news. He thought he was sharing one piece of good news with me, but he was really sharing two. He shared with me that the ulcer was responding to the antibiotics and I'd be okay, although he did want to see me. He did want to continue to see me. But the second piece of good news was that I was done with porn. I had a deal. It was over. I was never watching porn again. I left his office ecstatic. I've never felt so good. My friends, I did not last 1 week away from porn. Because it's not about commitment. It's not about willpower. It's not even about consequences. I was in a place where I was too uncomfortable to even ask anyone for help, to even talk to anyone about this. You know, if someone called me today and said, hey, Ellie, I just went to an eye doctor and I think I'm losing my eyesight because I watched too much porn. One of the things I would do was laugh and tell him that you're not going blind because of porn. If that was the case, you'd have a lot of blind people. I mean, the statistics are pretty staggering. There's a website, fightthenewdrug.org, an organization which combats pornography. And every year they publish the year in review of porn. So what did 2018 look like? 2018 year in review. So 100 million people logged on every single day to see the nearly 5 million videos that were uploaded in 2018, 5 million videos. That's one video every 60 seconds or so. Which would mean that if I was to start watching the first one today, I would never have to watch the same one twice for 115 years. And that's just one website. So a lot of people are watching porn, but I wasn't comfortable talking to anyone. So much so that eventually when I got into therapy, and I spoke to my therapist about everything, my childhood sexual abuse, my relationships, or lack thereof, my goals, my wishes, my desires, my work, I didn't tell him anything about porn. I didn't tell him anything about me trying and failing for so many years with it. It was too much shame. 5 or 6 years into therapy, I began dating a girl who would one day become my wife. When I met her, she reminded me of my grandmother, and there's just a similar feeling of safety, of peace. And for the first couple months I was with her, not only did I not watch porn, I didn't even think about it. It felt like the obsession just evaporated. It was gone. About 3 or 4 months into our relationship, we got into a disagreement. I felt uncomfortable, and I did what I've been doing for years when I felt discomfort. I watched a little bit of porn. But I felt different this time. I felt so much more shame. And I knew that there were a lot more at stakes. Before it was just about me, and I had reason to stop, and I tried to stop, but this was going to jeopardize the relationship. And I certainly didn't tell her about it. And as that secret kind of grew between us and pushed us further away, I saw what I was risking. And I walked back into my therapist's office, and I told him the truth. I'd been hiding a secret, keeping a secret from him. was watching a lot of porn and I really wanted to stop. To my surprise, my therapist suggested I meet with someone, of all people, another porn addict. I thought I'd get some advice from him, some suggestions, but no. He said, the first thing I want you to do is meet this guy. So I went to lunch. I didn't think, I want to be clear, I did not think I was a porn addict at that time. I wasn't even sure that I thought porn could be an addiction. I've since learned better on both fronts. But I went to lunch with this gentleman. And when I sat down with him, I was surprised to find someone who was not only very articulate and very easy to relate to, he's also very accomplished, very professional, successfully. He ran a company with a couple hundred people. And as we spoke, he shared his story with me, and I found myself sharing more details than I've ever shared with anyone in my life. And in the process, I felt the shame shifting. And if we understand the science of shame, we understand why that was happening in that conversation. Dr. Brené Brown, the famous researcher, shame researcher, explained shame as a fear, the fear of not being worthy of connection. So when I'm sitting at lunch with someone, and of all people, I'm connecting over porn addiction, the thing that has brought me the most shame, we understand why the shame would make way for healing. He introduced me to a support group of many others who were also struggling with this addiction. And I was surprised at the people I met in there, successful doctors, attorneys, people who had their lives together outside of this one area. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And I learned a lot about why I was using porn, and I began asking my questions more like, why was I using porn? Right? What are the reasons I'm going there versus, like, why can't I get rid of porn? Right? The focus didn't become on porn. The focus moved from porn to my own stuff. And in a lot of ways, I felt grateful for my addiction. I began to love it. Except I hated one thing. I hated that it was a porn addiction. Like, why can't I get another addiction? Why of all things was it this? I kind of wondered, you know, what are ways we can change this? I have a mentor and a teacher who says that if we see a problem, but we don't see the solution, we're the problem. But if we see a problem and we see the solution, you got yourself a calling. So I knew the solution. The solution was for everyone in the support group just to share their stories publicly. And if they did that, everyone would know what a porn addict is. And we'd be fine. But they didn't. So I said, you know what, I'll start doing it.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, no, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, because you clearly haven't been polanified. Like boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Numib Mills.
Sometimes one-on-one, and like I did in the conference room with a couple employees that day, some went better and some went worse. But I was enjoying what I was doing, and I said, you know, one day I'm going to do this in a more significant way. About 6 months ago, the opportunity presented itself. Our company every year has an evening of storytelling. 7 or 8 employees get up, share their stories, share their message, and it really creates a strong family environment, a family culture, creates trust in there. And 6 months ago, I raised my hand and said, I would like to share my story. I would like to share. So the facilitator asked me, what's your message? What's your topic? I said, my message is the importance of asking for help when we're in trouble. And my topic is porn addiction. You should have seen his face. You think you're going to talk about porn addiction from that stage? I said, yeah, absolutely. That's my story. He said, Ellie, you're the CEO of this company. People look up to you. People respect you. You are not talking about porn addiction. We went back and forth, and eventually the evening came, and I did not talk about porn addiction. The next morning and over the next few days, I just felt iffy, maybe a little shameful. And I told myself that I'm going to share this from a much bigger stage. I'm going to share it from the biggest stage I know. I'm going to share it from the TEDx stage. Not only for the audience there or the audience here, but also that my story is on the internet. That internet, that magic mailbox, which kicked my ass for so many years, instead of being a vehicle of shame like it was for me, will now be a vehicle of healing for myself and others. Because it truly is that when we share our hardships, it moves us through shame and into healing, both for ourselves and others. Not long ago, I received a text message. It read, "Since our conversation, I've been clean for 3 months. I haven't watched any porn. I don't remember the last time I was clean for a week." I thanked him for sharing this with me because it feels really good when my story is not only accepted by someone, but they find it useful. It helps them. He followed that up with another text message and he said, "I'll never forget who got me started." And I pinch myself when I hear these things because who got him started was someone who for so many years was so ashamed of this part of himself, so ashamed of the porn addiction. But one day I got so desperate that I asked for help, and I was introduced to a community of people who shared their stories so freely and willingly with me. And in the process taught me such an important message, probably the most important message of all. My story is not only something not to be ashamed of, it might just be something to be proud of. So I ask you here, consider doing the same. Talk about porn addiction. Consider doing the same. There's no one here who has not experienced shame. There's no one who has not overcome struggle, and there's no one who does not have a powerful story to share. Because I can tell you this from my own experience, there's no better feeling than turning shame upside down, smashing it upside the head, and using it as a way to help others. My name is Ellie Nash. I'm a porn addict. And I want to thank you because there's no better way I've found than this, sharing my story in front of an accepting room, accepting audience. To hit or to give me the best chance of achieving my number one goal, to never watch porn again. Thank you so much.
It's a party, it's a party, ladies and gentlemen. So, you see, you know when we hear stories of this magnitude, right? It makes you wonder, right? How dirty the world is. Just imagine, this is a boy that takes, just imagine your son is the 8-year-old. This is a boy that takes your child in as a younger brother. He's taking him to baseball games. He's taking him to hockey games. He's, you know, looking out for him, and you are happy because, you know, this is a good kid. And then one day he takes your child into the room, locks the door, and uses your child's body sexually. Like, yo. And you see what is birthed from there. It's madness.
Sex addiction is a growing problem in our society today, a problem that affects ordinary people. And the biggest barrier to getting help is the secrecy and the shame that surrounds it. My hope during this talk is to give you a bit more of an insight into the problem of sex addiction and also to encourage you to start talking about it so we can begin to break through that secrecy and shame. I'd like to start by telling you a little bit about Mark. Mark is 28 years old. He's a good-looking guy. He's intelligent, good sense of humour, and a great group of friends. But Mark is lonely, desperately lonely. Mark is a sex addict. It started with porn in his teens, as it does for so many, but since then it's escalated to visiting sex workers, and no one knows, absolutely no one. He dreams of having a normal life, you know, getting married, kids, the usual stuff, but he doesn't believe that anybody could love him. Indeed, he doesn't believe anybody would like him, let alone love him, if they knew about his secret life. Even if he beats his addiction and stops, you can't change the past. So he'd always have to lie about himself. He doesn't believe that anyone could ever really understand, and that's why he feels so desperately alone and isolated. Sex addiction is controversial. Many people think it's a myth, others think that it's just a joke. Some think it's an excuse for low sexual moral behaviours, perhaps used by people who don't want to take responsibility for the people that they hurt. Some might think it's a term that could describe anyone with a high sex drive, or maybe someone with unusual sexual tastes. What do you think about sex addiction? Perhaps you've never really thought about it before. We often don't consider our views on things until it actually affects us. But maybe it does actually affect you a lot more than you know. Conservative estimates say that 1 in 20 people struggles with sex addiction. So actually, in this audience here today, that means there's about 6 or 7 sex addicts. Sex addiction is a real problem, but professionals can't agree if addiction is the right name for it, or if it should be called an impulse control disorder, or hypersexuality, or sexual compulsivity, and a whole host of other names. And until we do get an accurate clinical diagnosis, chances are that doubts and misunderstandings will continue. But professionals do agree that more and more people are struggling with sexual behaviours that feel out of their control. For most, that includes internet pornography, but for some, it's also cybersex, visiting sex workers, cruising, multiple affairs, dating sites. The type of behaviour is not what defines it as an addiction, but the dependency on it. When we talk about alcohol addiction, we don't differentiate between those who drink whiskey or beer or tequila. Alcohol addiction is defined as a dependency on alcohol to make life feel more manageable. And of course, there are lots of people who can drink alcohol recreationally, maybe even a little too much at times, but they don't become dependent on it. You know you're addicted to alcohol if it's causing significant problems in your life, but in spite of those problems, you still can't control your drinking or stop. And the same is true for those who become dependent on internet pornography or any other kind of sexual behaviour. The reason that many people prefer the name addiction, including myself, is because that's actually how people who struggle with this say that it feels. It feels like an addiction. There's also... also, a growing body of research that is showing that compulsive pornography use impacts the brain in a very similar way to chemical dependencies. And like people dependent on alcohol and drugs, many people with sex addiction come from difficult backgrounds. And they unconsciously use their behaviours to forget the pain of the past, as well as numbing out difficult emotions in the present. But that's not true for all. Since the advent of the internet and smartphones, anyone can get hooked. Easy access and no education of risk means that more and more people are getting addicted without even knowing that it's happening. You can't drink alcohol for 8 hours a night, every night, and not notice the physical consequences. But you can view porn. And you couldn't go out and get high on drugs 5 times a week without those closest to you suspecting that something's going on. But you could probably go and visit a massage parlour. Unlike any other addiction, sex addiction often has no visible consequences until it's too late. Pornography is, of course, a very real part of our world now. Search engines deal with about 68 million requests for porn every single day. That's about 25% of all search terms. And the porn industry is estimated to be worth a staggering $97 billion. There is certainly no shortage of demand. And I'm not suggesting that we have to ban internet porn, nor am I saying that we need to censor what consenting adults choose to do with their private lives. But when you combine that easy access with no education of risk, then you're paving the way for an epidemic. Did you know there are 260,000 members of online support groups trying to give up porn because of the impact it's having on their life? Or that 27,000 people Google sex addiction and porn addiction every day? To be honest, I don't care what you call it, whether it's addiction, compulsion, or whatever. What I care about is Mark and people like him. Sex addiction is a real problem, and it affects ordinary people. Mark is not a fictional character. He's not a made-up case study to try and illustrate a point. He's an ordinary guy who came to me for help. Obviously, I've changed his name to protect his identity. So if anyone out there has got a friend called Mark who's 28 years old, I promise you I'm not talking about him. But Mark's story is real, very real. And unfortunately, so is the story of Jim and Lucy. Jim and Lucy have been happily married for 18 years. They've got 3 children. Jim's an accountant. Lucy's a teaching assistant. An ordinary couple. The kind of couple you'd be having for dinner tonight if you weren't stuck here at a TED talk. But 8 months ago, Lucy found a video on Jim's phone of him having sex with another woman in their living room. Her world fell apart. When she confronted Jim, he confessed that he'd recently joined an adult hookup site. He said that he had no intention of meeting anybody. It was just something he did out of curiosity. And initially, he said he'd only ever met that one person. But over time, the truth came out. 20 years hooked on porn and hundreds of casual sexual encounters. Their world is in shreds. Lucy feels as though her whole marriage has been a lie. She just can't believe that Jim would do this to her. He's just not that type, she said to me. Something that partners of sex addicts often say. And like most of the partners I meet, she's in shock. How could I not have known, she said. How can I live with somebody for 20 years and not know him? Remember, this addiction often has no visible side effects. Jim's struggling to explain why he did it. He's a sex addict. But he swears he loves Lucy, and he's never stopped loving her. And in spite of the anger and the rage that Lucy feels at Jim's betrayal, she still loves him. But like Mark that I was telling you about earlier, Lucy feels desperately alone and isolated. She doesn't want to tell any of their friends about this. What are they going to think of Jim? But also, what are they going to think of her? What assumptions are they going to make about her and their life together? One final story. Mary rang me the other day about her son. He's just dropped out of university. He's back home, suffering from depression and saying that life isn't worth living. Mary was tearful on the phone as she was describing what a lovely young man he is and how he'd always dreamed of having a medical career. But apparently he's messed up his GCSEs and didn't get the A-level grades he needed to get on the degree course that he really wanted to do. Mary's desperate to get help for him. Up until now, they just haven't understood what was wrong, but it turns out he's had a chronic problem with porn since he was 14. When they thought he was revising in his room, clearly he was using the computer for something else. But her son says he's too embarrassed to talk to anybody. Apparently, he's saying he knows that most lads his age look at porn, but not to the extent that he does. And certainly not to the extent of turning down real life partners and finding himself still a virgin at 20, an age which apparently he thinks is embarrassingly old. And yeah, like most mums, Mary's blaming herself. Why didn't I see what was going on? Why couldn't I have helped him? Why didn't I know? And you'll notice the theme here. She feels desperately alone and isolated. In spite of the good group of friends she's got, she's just too scared of what they'll think of her son. She wants to protect him from their judgment. If you're not someone who's struggling with sex addiction, then you probably know someone who is. A partner, a parent, a sibling, a child, a friend, a work colleague, someone you trust, someone you work with, someone that you respect and care about. Or if not, you'll certainly know a partner or a friend of somebody with sex addiction. But the question is, would they confide in you? Would they trust you not to judge? Might you say to yourself, I didn't think they were that type? If you're completely honest, what words do come to mind when you think of a sex addict? I suspect, like most people, the words that come to mind are someone who's a bit of a creep or a freak, or maybe someone who's a bit sleazy. Or you might think of somebody with low moral standards. You might think of someone who's selfish and greedy. Or worse, you might think that a sex addict was a risk to society, a potential rapist or child molester, a sexual pervert. Or you might just think they're a bit pathetic, sad, and desperate. Or, of course, if you don't believe in sex addiction, you might just think they're making a fuss about nothing and just being a bit crazy. But none of those words would describe Jim or Mark or Mary's son. Well, except perhaps sad and desperate, but not in the derogatory sense. Nor would they describe any of the hundreds of people that I've worked with over the years. Men and women. Ladies, if you thought you were off the hook with this condition, I'm afraid not. It's estimated that about 30% of people with sex addiction are women, but the stigma for women is even worse. A man might be a player or a bit of a lad, but a woman that has many sexual partners is still called a slut or a whore. Sex addiction is an equal opportunity condition. It affects men and women, young and old, straight and gay, Christian, Muslim, Sikh, married, single, the wealthy, the poor, ordinary people. Sex addiction thrives in secrecy and shame. And until we as a society can start talking about it openly and non-judgmentally, the problem is going to continue to grow. We need to stop making moral judgments about what people with sex addiction do and start listening to why they do it and trying to understand why they become so dependent on it. I believe as a society we have got a responsibility to educate people about sex addiction, especially our young people, and we desperately need more services for those who do get hooked. We need to stop quibbling over what it should be called and start seeing the devastation that it is causing in people's lives. Ordinary people like Mark, Jim, Lucy, Mary, and her son. Until we do, ordinary people like you and me and the people that we love and care about won't dare to reach out for help. They will suffer and struggle alone. We need to start talking about sex addiction and break through the secrecy and shame that continues it. Sex addiction is not a myth or a joke, and it is certainly not fun. It is a devastating condition that is seeping through our society, and you can help that to change. I think the most important thing that I've learnt in my 20 years as a therapist is the phenomenal power of compassion. When we can embrace the fact that we are all fallible, vulnerable human beings, we all make mistakes, we all have regrets, we all struggle with difficult emotions, and sometimes we don't always handle them well, then we can start talking about issues like sex addiction with compassion rather than judgment. I'm delighted to say that Mark did eventually reach out to a friend and confide in a friend. And the compassion and the care that that friend showed him gave Mark the courage, the strength, the hope and the motivation to finally overcome his problem and leave his past behind him. And maybe there's someone in your life that you could do that for today. There are three things I'd like you to take away from this talk. Firstly, sex addiction is a real problem. Secondly, it affects ordinary people. And thirdly, by talking about it with compassion, we can begin to break through the secrecy and shame that fuels it. The topic for this conference is Courageous Creations, and I'm here today talking on behalf of my clients, those with addiction and those who love them, because they don't have the courage to speak for themselves, because of the shame they feel and the fear that even those closest to them won't understand. I'd like to ask you to have the courage to start talking about sex addiction and create compassionate spaces in your relationships where the people that you love and care about can reach out for help. Thank you.
To me, porn is a drug. These words belong to Alex, a porn-consuming young man, which I interviewed for my co-author book on how porn affects our health. He was 6 years old when he first stumbled upon porn. And the images were so strong, he told me, he even had trouble sleeping afterwards. Today, he is 19 and still haven't been able to quit porn. It's like having sober periods with relapses, he explained, where I need more and more aggressive porn to experience the same kick. What do you think about this? A society where our attitudes aren't constantly being shaped by porn. A society where porn doesn't get to set the standard for our sexuality, our relationships, our attitudes, before we even have a chance to explore these amazing things for ourselves. My favorite sitcom of all times is Friends. If you do not know that one, and I definitely think you should, it's the very popular American TV show about six friends living in New York City. In one of the episodes, the two characters, Joey and Chandler, had, by mistake, may I add, gotten free cable TV access to porn. Oh, happy day, right? I mean, they were so happy, they did everything in their power to keep that TV on. And that kind of made me think, what was it about porn back then that made Joey and Chandler want to keep their TV showing porn on? And what is it about today's mainstream porn that is just so important we talk about? To many nowadays, porn is the number one teacher on sex education. And if that's the case, it's only fair that we ask ourselves, what curriculum does this teacher use? In 2012, Natalie Purcell, who's a PhD in sociology from the University of California, did a content analysis where she looked at over 100 of the roughly 250 most popular and best-selling porn movies. She found aggressive, abusive, and coercive acts in almost every single movie. The analysis also showed how porn, ever since the 70s, has become increasingly more aggressive and humiliating. And by the end of the time period that was analyzed, which was the 2000s, acts like ATM, gagging, double penetration, and even choking were included in almost every single movie. Now, ATM is not the money machine. It's actually an act called ass to mouth, meaning that the penis first enters the anus and then it goes directly into the mouth. And gagging is an act where the penis goes so far down the throat that basically your gag reflexes will start to kick in. It wasn't until the 2000s when these acts were heavily introduced in mainstream porn. 20 years before that, it was basically unheard of. In another interesting study, this one going back to as early as 2005 by Anna Bridgetts and Associates, looked at a random sample of 50 out of the 275 best-selling, most-rented U.S. porn movies from the time period of December 2004 to June 2005. Then, out of these 50 movies, they then randomly selected 304 scenes and analyzed them. And here's what they found. About 9 out of 10 scenes contained physical aggression. Now, physical aggression was defined primarily as gagging, remember the penis down the throat, slapping, and even hair pulling, among other things. Also, about 5 out of 10 scenes contained verbal aggression, which then primarily was defined as name-calling, where the most common names that were used were bitch and slut. Most of the people that were exposed to this aggression were women. And what was their typical response to this aggression, you think? Almost everyone reacted either positive or neutral, almost never negative. Let's apply this to everyday life, shall we? Let's say I'd given you a gentle stroke on the cheek. I'd probably see a smile on your face. Had I instead slapped you, you would perhaps not be as happy with me. Am I right? Yeah, I would assume. In porn, the typical response to aggression is precisely the opposite of what you would otherwise expect in real life. In real life, you will be mad at me for slapping you, but in porn, either you remain neutral or you even groan and ask for more. We just have to stop here for a second and consider the message that this is sending. What pressure, what norms, what standards is created from this? I once met with a guy who shared his concerns about his girlfriend never screaming and moaning like they do in porn. And he goes, "What am I doing wrong?" And then he says, "You know what? Maybe I should try to strangle her. That she will probably enjoy." That was kind of my reaction as well. Yeah.
Onda kalahandu yako parateza murwe data. Paife ohandimo kuyadi. Nondaka ne data no shoyo o tumaraka vahupi. O netwe kaimwe o kufutarumwe. Oku inyengarumwe, oku japandali, fio papa ndauka, onda pumga onetwe kawayo, hai jira jira ya fange, omafikwa amwe, ohandi streaming, omafikwa amwe, ohandi popi, omafikwa amwe, ohandi nigaishe, poshika ndoshimwe, pamwina parateza, oenda holora, ameha ishipangere, osho, paumwene. Dira dira oma kota fanoni data mom karo wiri mwana parika okutuma kutumaraka okustreaminga no kudenga pamwe na parates konga parates Namibia always
parates. I've educated on this issue for about 10 years now. I met with kids from the ages of 5 and 6 whom stumble upon pornography. And I met with young girls comparing themselves to the very often extreme standards set by porn, thinking they aren't good enough, not pretty enough, not sexy enough. I met with teenagers who compulsively consume pornography on a regular basis, doing everything in their power to quit, often unsuccessfully. And I met with guys so eager to please and so eager to perform just like they do in porn. And when they aren't getting the typical porn response from their partner in bed, a lot of them blame themselves for not being able to perform sexually. I was right in the middle of a talk about porn when a mom raised her hand. And she stood up, grabbed the mic, and said, "The other day, my 8-year-old boy came running out of his room, hysterically crying. At first, the little boy had refused to tell his parents what had happened. He did not want to talk about it. But eventually, it became clear he'd stumble upon porn. But it wasn't so much the actual porn that he had seen that upset him. He was crying because he thought, this thing that I just saw in porn is what my mom and dad do to each other in bed. More than 50 years of research has shown us what porn causes. First, porn can produce attitudes, which then goes and trivializes sexual aggression. Research proves a strong link between porn consumption and acting out sexually aggressive acts like sexual assault. And here's the thing. Even porn that's non-aggressive can have these effects on our attitudes due to the fact that whenever a person in porn is being dehumanized, that's when the change in attitudes is happening. I mean, are we getting this? This is actually what porn can do to us. Now, not all, of course, who consume pornography will go out and sexually assault someone. That's like not what we're saying here. But the fact remains that for an alarming amount of sex offenders, porn was a triggering factor, leading them to be less sensitive to sexual aggression. This is not rocket science. This is basic human psychology. What we see often, we get used to. Let's go back to Joey and Chandler for a second. My favorite sitcom, Friends. What was it that was going on inside their brains that made them so eager to keep that TV on? Neuroscientists have found that pornography hijacks the reward pathway in the brain and can become a compulsive behavior with addictive qualities. In 2014, Dr. Valerie Voon, and I think this must be stated for the record, she's a global authority on addiction and also the leading researcher in the neuroscience department at the University of Cambridge. She released her long-awaited study, a study that provided groundbreaking results on how viewing porn affects the brain. And the study showed how compulsive porn users have real similarities on several levels to those addicted to drugs. The image that you see here is an illustration of a brain scan image that shows the brain activity of healthy volunteers when shown pornography versus compulsive users. And as you can see, when the compulsive users were shown porn, their response was much higher, indicating that they were both more triggered by the porn shown to them and that they also experienced a stronger urge for porn. So the compulsive users had a greater wanting for porn, but they still did not have a higher sexual desire and the liking for it, which is a finding that should debunk the myth that those who are compulsive porn users must simply be people with a greater sexual desire. Also, having a wanting for something but not a liking for it is a finding that really fits like a glove with the current definition of addiction. The facts are starting to pile up. And if you ask me, it's just a matter of time and research before pornography addiction is formally acknowledged. But until then, we have to continue listening to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us. Okay, so I think you would agree with me that we definitely have a challenge here, right? I mean, we have 24/7 unlimited access to physically, verbally aggressive material that clearly has an impact on our attitudes, relationships, sexuality, intimacy, possibly even causing addiction. Therefore, we need to act now. We need to act quickly if we want to change this. Because as of now, this train is headed in the wrong direction. So, do you want a solution? Yeah, I can sense that. I mean, I really think it's so important that we talk porn, okay? With education as one of our main strategies, we're going to start the conversation about porn. We are going to talk to our students, kids, colleagues, teachers, family members, neighbors, whoever wants to listen to us. We must include a critical discussion about porn in schools, in workplaces, in locker rooms, at home, just like we disrupted the idea that smoking was just a harmless and a social thing to do. And just like we're teaching critical thinking about media and advertisement, we are going to disrupt old ideas and beliefs about porn and start teaching critical thinking about it. With education and conversation that creates awareness, we are going to equip the next generation with a mindset that won't make them easy targets. I sat down with a father who wanted to share his best tip on how to talk to your kid about porn. Well, he said, first you got to make sure that the conversation you're having is happening while driving your car. Okay? So you're driving and your kid is next to you. First, you don't have to look straight at each other, so that helps, right? And second, he goes, and he almost like whispered, and he says, your kid can't go anywhere. Whatever works, right? Obviously, just having a conversation about porn, even if it's, you know, the really awesome car conversation, isn't going to solve everything. This is not a small problem, therefore no, you know, quick fix solutions exist. But I believe that by teaching a critical thinking, a critical mindset to this, we're off to a pretty good start. And now if you're kind of wondering, is this educational strategy, is it really working? I want to show you a message that we received on Instagram just a couple of weeks ago to Changing Attitudes. And Changing Attitudes is a youth organization where I'm CEO, and we basically educate on this issue. Now let me read this to you because it is pretty awesome. I would just like to thank you for being a contributing factor to me having completely quit porn. I've been porn free for 2 months now, and I'm feeling much better than before. Also, I feel I'm no longer contributing to an offensive and obnoxious industry. How awesome is this, right? To me, this is what it's all about. Yeah. Would you think about this? A society based on equality, based on consent, based on sexual health, where we get to explore, and where we get to be curious, and where we get to decide what we want, what we think is sexy, what turns us on. But to get there, we need to start the conversation about porn now. We need to anchor ourselves in research, stats, science, real-life stories. For too long, the health consequences generated by porn has been more or less completely ignored. But it's time we change that, which is why I'm leaving you with this. How are you going to talk about porn? Thank you very much.
The idea is to just talk about it. The idea is to just go diving into it and we talk about it. But it is not an easy thing. So maybe we should also consider talking about masturbation with our people. Our people can be elders, it can be youngins, it can be anybody.
Did you know that spicy foods actually increase your sex drive? that they wake up your libido and actually cause you to become more lustful as a result. And did you know that if you're a man and you masturbate enough, you can actually become infertile? Not only that, but it can cause a slow degenerative condition that not only affects the man, but any offspring that he has as well. And did you know that too much self-loving can actually cause you to grow hair on the palms of your hands? Everyone will know what you do with your spare time. Okay, everything I just told you was a lie. Thank God. But it was not that long ago when people used to believe these things, and many still do. So today I'm talking to you about masturbation myths, so we can uncover some of today's most perpetuated falsehoods and unearth some from the past that have actually come to shape our present day reality. For example, unsweetened Kellogg's cornflakes were developed by Dr. John Harvey Kellogg. See, he was an anti-masturbation crusader. He believed, as did many people at the time, that spicy foods led to lust, and lust led to masturbation, and masturbation led to a whole host of horrible things. So he developed this diet that was bland in flavor to hopefully decrease the chances of masturbation. It was actually his brother Will that added sugar to the flakes and marketed them as a breakfast cereal before they took off. The Graham cracker actually has a similar past. Sylvester Graham was a minister and anti-masturbation crusader, and he developed the Graham cracker as well as part of a bland diet in order to decrease masturbation. If you only knew what we did with s'mores. Now, it wasn't just these two men campaigning against the evils of masturbation. In fact, most healthcare professionals at the time and health manuals believed the same thing. So now it's easy for us to snicker at this and think how naive and ignorant these people must have been to believe such silly things. Because, of course, we have evolved leaps and bounds out of our grandparents' generation of sexual shaming. We know our facts. I mean, we're a part of movements like legalizing gay marriage and improving our sex education in our school systems and increasing our clitoracy through things like the vagina monologues. We know our facts. Or do we? There's actually still a lot of falsehood around masturbation today. You see, as a sex therapist, I get to meet and talk with a whole host of different people. It's actually quite a unique opportunity because people come to me and they tell me their innermost thoughts and feelings, their desires, their fears, their anxieties, their wishes, everything. And over time, you start to notice patterns. So, for example, women will often come to me because they have not been able to have an orgasm. Now, being pre-orgasmic could stem from a whole host of different things. But one trend I often see is that many women still feel so much shame around self-pleasuring, around masturbation, that they don't do it. Therefore, they're reliant on their partner as their only means to orgasm attainment. But they have no roadmap for their body. With men, I often see a different trend, where maybe... stay with me on this... maybe they've relied on masturbation as their sole means for orgasm attainment for so long that this has created adverse patterns. Now, regardless if the client is a male or a female, looking at the issues surrounding masturbation and how that ties to the presenting sexual issue is extremely important to recognize. So today, I thought we'd address masturbation myths as our mistaken beliefs will have a trickle-down effect on future generations and contribute to many sexuality-based issues that I see today. So let's do a little fact or fiction with our favorite pastime, shall we? Fact or fiction. Women who rely on vibrators or toys to masturbate will not be able to have an orgasm with their partner during sex. They will become dependent on it. That is fiction, yes. So some women do like more intense direct stimulation on the clitoral hood, which a vibrator would provide more so than a penis, yes. But that does not cause an inability to reach orgasm by other means. In fact, research shows that women who take the time to self-explore and learn about their body through masturbation are more likely to obtain an orgasm with a partner than those who do not. All right, fact or fiction. Those in dating relationships are more likely to masturbate than those who are single. That is a fact. So those in relationships are more likely or just as likely to masturbate than those who are single. Not only that, but homosexual behavior is associated with a higher degree or higher frequency of masturbation. Men masturbate more than women. Older people less than younger people. African Americans less than other groups. Non-religious more so than Christians. And the more educated you are, the more likely it is that you will masturbate. Fact or fiction? I think she's reading 50 Shades of Grey. Women, fact. Women generally masturbate by inserting objects into the vagina, therefore simulating penetrative sex. That was a quick one. Fiction, yes. Now, yes, some women do masturbate in this fashion, and that's fine and completely normal. However, it's far more likely for women to masturbate by using clitoral stimulation or the stimulation of the clitoral hood. The clitoris is actually a very interesting little body part. It's not merely a little button that's hidden away. You know, we say, look for the man, little man in the canoe. It's actually a fairly large internal organ, and it is the only body part that exists solely for pleasure. The clitoris is estimated to be between 9 and 12 centimeters long and 6 centimeters wide. Fact or fiction? Early childhood masturbation is abnormal and may mean that your child is hypersexual. Well done. Fiction. So children learn very early on what feels good when they touch their bodies, both male and female. So early childhood masturbation, well before puberty, even into infancy, is actually quite normal. This man looks very worried. Fact or fiction? Too much masturbation can cause adverse health risks. That is fiction. So the only health risk associated with too much masturbation would be allergic reactions due to lubricants, infections due to unwashed toys, or just skin irritation in general. Masturbation is actually the ultimate form of safe sex, and masturbation... In fact... Masturbation resulting in orgasm actually carries with it a plethora of positive health benefits. It alleviates headaches, it decreases stress, it's a sleep aid, it actually improves your immune functioning. And women who masturbate during their period can actually alleviate menstrual cramps. It's estimated that about 95% of men and 89% of women have masturbated at some time in their life. So masturbating for both sexes, every day even, is normal and healthy. So the only adverse health risk that might be associated with it is if you are masturbating so much that you stop going to work, let's say, or it's impeding your daily functioning and social responsibilities, then it may be an issue. And you should come see me. Fact or fiction? Masturbation will not impede your stamina or infect your performance before a big game or workout. That is a fact. So as I already said, masturbation carries with it a plethora of positive health benefits. So it actually may be beneficial to you rather than harmful. Again, the only thing that could cause you problems is if you're masturbating to the point of exhaustion. But then that would be true for any activity where you're repeatedly using the same muscles over and over and over again. All right, last one. Now, this is a very common one I get. Fact or fiction, masturbation causes premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction. We're quieter on this one, I see. That is fiction. Now, this is a very complicated issue. So the general act of masturbation does not cause erectile dysfunction. However, it may be helpful to think of it in terms of a sports analogy. So let's say you are a professional athlete, and during practice, you're sloughing off, you're not trying hard during the drills, you're just not being an overall good player. Now, when you get into a game time situation, you're not going to play like a pro. Why? Because you practice like you play. So you have to think of masturbation in the same way. Masturbation is the practice, partnered sex is the play. So for example, let's say as a man, every single time you masturbate, you only give yourself a few minutes from first touch to ejaculation. That may condition you to those few minutes. So when you're with a partner and you want to last longer, that may create problems for you. Or let's say you watch the same type of visual stimuli. Let's say foot fetish pornography, for instance. And then you're with a partner who hates their feet, doesn't want you anywhere near them. That could create psychological arousal problems for you. So now, again, I'm not saying it's a cause and effect. What I am stressing is the importance of making your practice and your play as similar as possible, just like anything in life that you want to be good at. So now, I could stand up here and do the fact versus fiction battle all day. But perhaps the catalyst for change isn't just in the education, but on a shift in perspective. Now, there's few people in North America today, at least, campaigning against the evils of masturbation, like Kellogg and Sylvester Graham used to do. However, there's still a lot of negativity around this one word or this one behavior that we have in our society today. So if we think of all this negativity around this one thing, how do we break free of these perpetual cycle of fear-based myths? We just keep creating more. I mean, the Roman Catholic Church still holds that masturbation is sinful. So many Catholics may not masturbate or feel guilty about masturbating because of that. And many children inherit negative views around masturbation from their parents. Now, speaking to the guilt, when I was younger, I did something that I probably shouldn't have. Now, I was really worried about getting caught. So I pleaded with the cosmos. And I was like, please, if I can get away with this, just let me out unscathed. I will not masturbate for an entire month. 30 days. 30 straight days. Now, I have no idea who I was pleading to. I'm not a religious person, but I think in times where we feel like we don't have a lot of control over our present or our future, we reach out to these cosmos. So now, I was lucky enough not to get caught. But when I look back on that now, what stands out for me is that I viewed masturbation as something that was so wrong or something that was so bad that I could use it as a bargaining tool. Almost like giving up smoking or drinking. Now, I was very blessed to be raised in a household with amazing parents who never taught me that masturbation was wrong or something I should be ashamed of or something was sinful. And as I already said, I wasn't a religious person, so where was I getting these messages from? I've come to realize it was from our society as a whole. For example, if you Google the term masturbation and look for synonyms, words like self-abuse come up on almost every single page. So with all this negativity around this one word, how do we break free of this? I think we need new terminology for the word masturbation. Because changing the words we use to describe people, places, events, and ideas are our first step towards changing our perspectives on them. Now, I'm not saying that masturbation is a bad word or that using proper terminology is a bad thing. What I am saying is that if we can be a little bit more positive in our adult slang word of tongue and our day-to-day conversations, this would be helpful. For example, stayed in last night, played a little sexual solitaire. It's a good night. It's a good night. Or I asked Jenny to come out with me, but she said she needed, you know, a little me time. A little self-relaxation therapy, you know? She was having herself a onesome instead of a threesome. Sounded great. Now, I'm not saying that this change is going to happen overnight. But what I am asking is for each of you to do a little introspection. To look at the words that we use to describe masturbation and our hang-ups surrounding it. Because if we can change this, we can change our perspective on it, we will have a better society. We will be better partners, better lovers, and better communicators. And the sexual problems that I see daily will decrease dramatically. So, I think now is the perfect time tonight. Go home, set the mood, turn the lights down low, and romance the hell out of yourself.
Lipura ninge no wapuwa eva tere ulikoni mandu tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukulile Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo Iho etike kovano hile koshuala Konongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okupitida oipindi konu konda doi inawa Minuto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa komarude dayo loka Opone ushendi senawa nokumuna oijabweli nawa Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM Onura itatime vali heari nola natu heari vali no heari Ile konderewa mura hetatu natu vali o hetatu batatu Oma filane Eagle FM the eye
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month. Or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lud.
Short on cash? Then get your USAVE for these bargains. Two tins Pacific mackerel fish in chili or tomato sauce, just $20 for both. 200 grams of champion Hunter's Poloni, just $19.99. 375 milliliter U brand tomato sauce, just $18.99. 1 liter Rietfontein Nectar guava or orange juice, also just $18.99. And 2 liter pop school drink, only $14.99. You save. Your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the RR. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
It has no romance to it. It has no dimension to it. It's almost as if the two humans involved in it or however are like machine parts, right? They're not human anymore. And there's no emotion involved. There's no kind of spiritual connection. It's depressing. It's really, really depressing.
One of the sort of adjacent points here about purposelessness, about loneliness, about the struggles and plights of young men in the world that they face and young women is the conversation around pornography. If you go on many of the social media yes. apps these days, you will be exposed to pretty explicit pornography, whether you were searching for it or not. There's certain apps in particular where even if I'm scrolling on my feed, certain things will pop up and I go, Jesus Christ, like, you know, I'm at work here. And I was thinking about this more broadly because the studies show that about, I think it's like 80% of men and about 40% of women in the United States use pornography. And I wondered if you had a view on how it robs us of the hard work it takes to form romantic relationships.
Yeah.
And if the act of consuming pornography is robbing us of the desire for the real thing.
Well, it's an addiction and you have to understand that you are being manipulated, that you are being programmed, that these people have figured out exactly the kinds of things, the kinds of images that are going to hook you. And you're being played. You're a fool. They're playing with you. Just like Mark Zuckerberg in Facebook knows all the algorithms to hook you to his, to the news feed. You're being played by the images they know how to create and keep you always wanting more. Just like fast food has all these tricks to constantly be eating their Doritos or whatever it is. Okay. But the other thing is, so I'm not going to preach and moralize about pornography from a prudish aspect of it because I'm not a prude, but I have a chapter in the book that I'm writing on the sublime on what I call love sublime. And the act of loving not God, not the universe, but another human being, an individual, man or woman, gay or straight or whatever it is, and how sublime that is. And what it is in that relationship, the boundaries between the two of you are allowed to melt and your ego can soften and you can feel their world and they can feel your world and you have a connection that for a social animal is the highest form of connection. It's superior to a religious connection. I'm sorry. And what it requires is we have the expression falling in love and it literally is falling. It's like you fall. You're open and you're vulnerable and you're letting yourself fall. And when you're not, what stops you from doing that is you don't want to be hurt. You don't want to be vulnerable, right? Because if you open yourself to someone else, you're likely to get hurt. And so the moment there's a disagreement between you or there's a moment where a friend says something nasty about this person you're interested in, you stop falling, you cut it off, and that romantic thing ends and dies. But if you get past that and you allow yourself to open up completely and you just keep falling, this incredible thing can happen. And I describe it to you. And I describe it, the dynamics of that and examples of that and why for a social animal, it's like the ultimate experience. And so pornography is completely robbing you of that because love of another human being is a sense of enchantment, right? There's like this spark that's happening, this electricity, and it's, obviously, sex is involved, so it's a very physical relationship as well, but it goes beyond that. It also has a kind of spiritual component, right? But it's a sense of enchantment where the world becomes alive to you. Everything is beautiful in the world in those moments, right? Mm-hmm. And pornography is disenchanting you from everything. It's making it all mechanical and ugly and it has no romance to it. It has no dimension to it. It's almost as if the two humans involved in it or however are like machine parts, right? They're not human anymore. And there's no emotion involved. There's no kind of spiritual connection. It's depressing. It's really, really depressing. When I see it, I feel really sorry that I experienced this, and I feel really sorry for the people who are in that industry. I find it really, really ugly and alienating. Now, I'm not, as I said, a prude, and I could watch a great movie with a love scene in it, and it's very exciting and beautiful. But the seduction element, the element of, I saw a movie recently, a Japanese movie by the great director Ozu from the 50s. And there was a man who was married, and he was about to have an affair with this woman who was kind of seducing him. And they had this kiss. And I go, I thought, wow, I was getting, I hate to use the word turned on, but I was getting really excited. It was so full of emotion and energy, and it made the sexual element so much more powerful by the element of romance, by the element of something kind of transgressive. There was no nude bodies. There was no sex you ever get to see. But the lead up to it and the nature of the emotions involved made it, to me, deeply, deeply exciting. And if young men particularly can't have that experience, if everything is so mechanical, is so computerized, it's going to be like AI. It's going to be like AI sex, you know? Then you're losing your soul. You're losing your capacity for really falling in love, for really having that kind of dimensional experience, which, by the way, can be extremely physical, and it can only last for 3 months. I'm not saying it has to be 20 years with one woman or one man. It can be for 3 months. But it enriches you. It makes you more human. It's not just pornography. There's too much of that in social media as well on other levels. You have to understand what it means to be a human being, first of all. And we're physical animals. We can't be in our heads all the time. We think with our bodies, right? We think with the chemicals mixing in our bodies. We're very physical, and we're social animals to the core. And that social animal, what makes us superior is that we connect. I can kind of look at you, and I can maybe understand what you're feeling, what you're thinking, and we can have a discussion, and our ideas can go back and forth and connect and go to higher levels of understanding or lower levels of disagreement. But that's what it means to be a human being. You're not this fucking AI machine. You're not a bot. You're not an algorithm. You're not a little piece of data that Mark Zuckerberg can mix with. You're a human being with a body, with physical problems, with hormones, with emotions that are coursing through you. And you have to become a physical creature, which means doing things in the world, taking action, working, building a business, doing things with your hands, you know, exercise, meeting people. Be inside of your bodies. And when you're in pornography, you're disembodied. You're not in your body. You might be wanking off, as far as I know, you know, probably are, but you're not really inside of your body in any meaningful way. And so it's like my hope, if there's any hope, is that, and there's seeds of it in the world now, where young people are going to start getting disgusted with this because the human spirit is still very powerful. And it's still like, I don't want to be like this. It doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel right. And at some point, my hope is in 20, 30 years, after I'm probably dead, there'll be a movement where people are going to be so against this that they're going to go in the opposite direction. They're going to be returning to what it means to be a human being. There'll be a rekindling of interest in our past, in the primitive past, in the pagan past, things I'm writing about in my book right now. And I've seen things like that sometimes, like in the New York Times, they had an article a few weeks ago about a group of young people in college who hate social media and absolutely refuse it and will not, it's like almost like a fraternity or a sorority. They will not allow anybody into their group who ever looks at their phone. And I go, yay, yay, right on, brother. I could have, if I'm in college right now, I would join that. Not that I think everything is evil. I have my own phone, et cetera. But if I were young, that sense of, this is a nasty world. I want to return to what it means to be a human being. I want to spark a movement, a revolution that goes back to that. I hope that that's going to happen. I hope that's in the cards.
I stopped watching porn for two reasons, basically. The first one was that porn brought so much anger and violence into my private fantasies. And these were anger and violence that were not there originally to begin with. And I did not want that for me anymore. This was not me, and I decided to just put an end to it. Easier said than done. I'll get to it later, but... The second reason was that I came to realizing, I think, that only by watching porn, I take part in creating a demand for filmed prostitution, because that's what porn really is, filmed prostitution. Porna stands for prostitute, grafia stands for documentation, and prostitution was nobody's childhood dream, okay? It is always a result of trouble and distress. Now, I became aware of that gradually when I was volunteering with men and women in prostitution, some of them victims of human traffic, serving aid in brothels, under the bridge, in street corners, but you don't really need to do all that in order to understand how this mechanism of porn and prostitution works. Because porn as a genre, it's not about erotica or healthy sexual communication. It is all about male domination of women, subordinance of women, not only as a sexual practice, as a way of being, as a genderial hierarchy in this world. Like, if we would ask porn, if we were to ask porn, how does it define something as sexual? What qualifies, what defines something as sexual? Porn would laugh in our face. What defines sexual? Whatever men find arousing. Men find it arousing to choke a woman, to have brutal sex without one touch, hug, kiss, tender caress. Well, then it is sexual. It arouses men to see a woman or a child cry. It is sexual. It arouses men to rape a woman. Well, then it is sexual. In every mainstream porn gallery on the web, we can find the rape category, side by side with the humiliation category, abuse category, crying category, and so on. And this is all as if regular porn is not already filled with these motives. Even in its mildest version, the mildest version of porn, what porn is showing us, like, I don't know, 80, maybe 90% of the time, is actually sex with no hands involved. And this is not how we authentically desire. Sorry, I'll repeat that. I see your look. Sex with no hands involved. Okay. If you're not going to give up watching porn, so next time you do watch, just notice that porn cameras have no interest in capturing any normal sensual activities, such as petting, caressing, making out, touching, hugging, kissing. No. What porn cameras are into is the penetration. So normally, the composition would be a man and a woman. Hopefully just one. Okay, so one man and one woman. His penis is inside her. Don't be picky. Doesn't matter where inside. Somewhere inside her, there is a penis. His penis is somewhere inside her, okay? And in order to not block the camera for doing this extreme close-up on the penetration, he's standing with his hands behind his back most of the time. And the woman is in this uncomfortable position, and she needs to handle the penis inside her without damaging the hair or makeup work done on her, because that's money invested and time invested in her, without disturbing his aggressive movement, and mainly without blocking the camera. So the result is that we got two people having sex, different shapes and acrobatics or something, but they are having sex when the only body parts that actually touch each other are the penis and the part being penetrated. No hands involved. Now, I talk, I don't know, 250, 300 times a year, soldiers, students, pupils. No one has ever come up to me and say, Ran, you know, that part with sex with no hand thing, that was my authentic desire. Like, when I was 11 or 12, I never wanted to kiss anybody or touch them. I was not curious about that. It was all penetration to begin with. No one has ever said that. Before porn. After porn. In my private fantasies before watching porn, there was always a very strong narrative. And the narrative was of sensuality and mutuality, which means that I had always imagined what I will say to her. What would she possibly answer? What options do I have to respond? In real life, it never works like I planned, but it was super important in my mind in terms of arousal, the build-up, the location, the setting, where will it be? What are the circumstances of me and her being all alone all of a sudden? How will this bodily inflaming between us will emerge step by step. It was super important before porn. After making a habit out of porn, it conquers your mind. It invades your brain, and I lost my ability to imagine, which means I found myself, and I won't be too explicit, but trying to masturbate, just closing my eyes, trying to fantasize desperately about something human and not making it, because my head was bombarded with all those images of women being violated and subordinated and forced into pretending they enjoy diabolic sperm rituals, okay? So, this is pretty much the result. And we are all vulnerable to pornography. It's not just young people. And we should be very careful, I think, with not only what we put into our bodies, but in terms of food and nutrition, in what is the nutrition of our mind? Because everything we watch invades us. I'll give you a short example from non-sexual areas. I came back home and my beloved one was watching some cultural junk. She was watching a karaoke show, auditions, the one with the chair spinning. And we don't have a TV set back home, okay? We don't have a TV set back home, but only because it allows us to falsely present ourselves as deep and profound people. I never heard of that. Mastectomy, who? Angelina, we don't have a TV. We watch every cultural junk possible, okay? Not me, not her, we don't contemplate about l'existence. We download stuff, and we download all cultural junk. So I'm watching this 20 minutes karaoke show, and it was so boring and tedious, okay? 2 minutes talking, 4 minutes blabbering about it. I lost patience after like 20 minutes, and I went off to take a shower. And the most interesting part was in the shower, because what I found out there was myself in my most pathetic ever. I'm going to share it with you. I want to feel that you actually accept me and love me, so I have to share my most pathetic, and you have to accept it now. I don't know, until I got over myself, if it took me, 5, 7, 10 minutes to realize that I'm standing under the water in the shower, pondering severely, what would have been my song for the auditions? Deep and profound, mind you. I won't be doing this Rihanna, Lady Gaga, I will be doing Mercedes Sosa, Como un Pájaro Libre. I'll be doing a cover for Bob Dylan's Blind Willie McTell. Ain't that deep and profound? I had to realize that I'm an idiot because I have no talent for music. More than that, I never wanted to be neither a musician nor a single songwriter. This was never a part of my inner world of wishes. Okay, but I'm a human being. What can I do? I was watching that for 20 minutes. It entered my brain for a while. So if we take this example and we just try to measure or estimate the impact of 20 minutes of watching no matter what, how it invades our mind and conquer our wantings and desires, let's just try to imagine, or I can share with you horribly, what is the impact of 20 minutes of watching porn once, twice a week, nothing unmoderated. It's overtaking. And porn is in our households, whether we want it or not, and I believe that it does not agree with our well-being. And because we have internet in the Western world all over the place, almost in every cellular phone now, we've got 90% of 12-year-olds watching porn on a regular basis. And it has both an addictive effect and a paralyzing effect. It's addictive because we develop somewhat of a dependency in porn. But the paralyzing part is because, mainly for young boys and men, because porn is teaching us that as a man, you are solely valued in sex by having a large penis and an eternal erection. According to porn, being a valuable sexual partner does not relate with being sensual, passionate, attentive, generous, well-coordinated. None of the above. It is all about large penis and eternal sunshine, which we don't possess. So boys become paralyzed, and if they don't become paralyzed by watching porn, very often they turn into imitators of what they saw, which means they become aggressors. Aggressors, even when emotion is involved. Like, there is so much sexual abuse going on nowadays within the confines of what we perceive from the outside as beautiful teenage love stories or healthy adult relationships, because we don't really talk about sex. We just see it all over the place. We don't really talk about it. So what goes on in the confines of a certain room, but these are all sexual mutations that happens. If we talk about women, it's not only that, but young girls and women get the message, not only from hardcore porn, but from our porn-influenced mainstream culture. Have you seen any Miley Cyrus, Lady Gaga video clip, commercials. That's porn with clothes on it. So girls get this notion that if you want to be worthy of love, first and foremost, you have to be worthy of sexual desire. And now, the definition of sexual desire almost equals be like a porn star. So I work in dozens and dozens of high schools and junior highs. In every single one of these schools, I find girls that at a certain point agreed to be documented in an intimate situation because they wanted to please some guy that they had feelings for. And this guy misappropriated their trust. Always same story, so he sells it on WhatsApp application or on the web, in the internet. And normally nobody even addresses him in terms of moral. But it is always girls that suffer from shaming and mortification. They can change school, they drop out normally. Change school, move to another city and still be haunted on social networks. They develop clinical depressions, severe eating disorders, as if we don't have enough reasons in our culture to develop eating disorders. They become so isolated socially. So some of them, like Amanda Todd, rest in peace, some of them actually commit suicide because they find no more value in life or in themselves. So porn is not only in our house, it is a capital case. It is not a minor phenomenon in our society. It is a question of life and death sometimes. It is mainly a question of life and death for the people who participate in porn, because porn is not an embodiment of freedom of speech, freedom of occupation, blah, blah, blah. No, it's an embodiment of sex exploitation, working side by side with human traffic, raping, pimping, solicitation. For everyone, porn star with a book contract or a production company, we've got hundreds of thousands of women and girls who does not survive out there. Literally, they just don't make it. The sex industry just, how do you say, chews them up and spits them back into brothels, into hooking in the street, escorting, massage parlors with happy or unhappy ending, depends who you ask. And I'm not joking, this is serious. Like, this is the whole spectrum of prostitution. So many of them doesn't even make it to the age of 50. I'm talking countries that the average life expectancy is 75, 76 years now. They don't make it to the age of 50. For reasons mainly. Drugs, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, being murdered by a John, a pimp, a boyfriend. And the fourth reason is suicide once again. Because if you're a prostitute, on camera or off camera, you're in the situation that we can refer to as social death. We have all sat in the dinner table with people who probably consumed prostitution, that have been to a brothel once, twice, at least. We never sat down to the table with a prostitute, not with a declared one. So that's social death. It is not glamorous, not at all. And when I sit in the privacy of my room and I watch porn, even without paying, no need to pay, it's free, okay? I hope you know that, if you're still consuming. Whatever I am watching is creating a demand, and wherever there is a demand, there will be supply. There's a correlation. If I watch pornography of black older women, somebody is going to go out and pimp black older women. Asian minors, somebody's already trafficking Asian minors in order to film them, okay? Israeli women, Palestinian women, WASP, All-American College Girls, that are strong in the last few years, it's a very upcoming category. The scum of the earth are already out there trying to solicitate and prostitute these women on camera. So I stopped watching porn for my personal well-being, my intimate communication, my private erotic life, my, you know, reclaiming control and responsibility over my mind. But by doing that, I actually stopped contributing to this horrible sex industry. And that's a good thing to do, I believe. And I would really like to propose that notion of physically and emotionally safe sex. Emotionally safe sex. It does not mean going back to be conservative or unliberated sexually. I'm all for sexual freedom. It just means that we need to put genderial hierarchy aside, subordinates aside, and bring back in, let's just say, laughter as a critical mass for intimacy. Two souls, two humans, two souls alone in private. Can they please have a laugh together? I don't care if they know each other for a decade or for an hour. If two souls alone in a room does not manage to have a laugh together, what good could possibly grow there, sexual and non-sexual? That's emotionally safe sex. I've got so many things I really want to share with you, but I feel like my time is almost up. So I just really want to ask for us to speak about these issues more, because I strongly feel that our history of silence never did us any good, because silence only perpetuates more silence, while talking normally gives birth to more talking, more sharing, more identification, more awareness, more change. Small change in our small, humble life, but real change, a true one, emotionally safer. Thank you for listening.
Years ago, Aristotle believed that some people were born naturally fit to be slaves. He lived in a culture where nearly every household owned one. He accepted the status quo. Today we don't, and yet an estimated 27 million slaves remain in the world, more than ever in history, and 80% of them experience sexual abuse and exploitation. In Atlanta alone, the sex trafficking industry generates $290 million a year. And the FBI estimates at least 300 children are trafficked there every month. Sex trafficking is the fastest growing illicit industry in the world. But I'm not actually here to talk about the horrors of sex trafficking. I'm here to talk about consistency. In our country, sex is legislated. We have outlawed rape, statutory rape, and pedophilia. When sex produces a child, we call it parenting. And we are legally bound to it for 18 years. When sex causes incurable diseases, we are legally bound to tell our partners about it forever. Sex is a legally significant act because of its physical, psychological, and relational consequences. And so far, the laws are consistent, right? It should occur between consenting adults who understand the risks and responsibilities that come with it. What about sex plus money? Forced sex for money we call commercial sex trafficking, and it's illegal. Consensual sex for money is prostitution, and it's still illegal here in all but two counties in Nevada. So basically, if money is exchanged for sex, a crime is committed. Unless someone films the sex and distributes it on the World Wide Web. This we call hardcore pornography. And not only is it legal and protected as an expression of free speech, but we celebrate and encourage it as a rite of passage, recreational escape, and marital inspiration. But people are still getting paid to have sex, a legally significant act with physical, psychological, and relational consequences. This is the commodification of human beings for the pleasure of paying consumers, for an estimated $14 billion a year. Remember the one with the free porn, the Friends episode from way back in 1998? From prime time to late night, our popular culture lightheartedly accepts the reality of porn consumption while simultaneously joining in the public outcry against sex trafficking. But remember how the tobacco companies denied any relationship with cancer for decades? Just like tobacco undeniably causes cancer, the pornography industry both drives and supplies the growing demand for sex slaves. Inconsistencies like this historically lead to injustice and hypocrisy, and ultimately weaken societies. Today, 96% of males surveyed and over 50% of females have viewed online pornography, mostly over their smartphones and often at work. Researchers can't find enough people who haven't seen porn to make a control group to study its effects. By age 12, nearly all of our nation's adolescents are allowing internet porn to set their sexual expectations. What does this mean? Instead of placing sex within the context of a dynamic, multi-layered, ever-changing relationship with a real person, the vast majority of pornography portrays sex as a solely physical act for predominantly male arousal, which proves insatiable. The addictive properties of live-action porn consumption parallel that of cocaine, especially on developing minds. Users require more extreme and deviant forms of pornography to get the same level of satisfaction, leading them to risk their education, jobs, and relationships while compulsively searching for novel scenes, added violence, and younger performers. In 2015, the most common search term for porn was teen. And younger victims follow with over 116,000 searches for child pornography every day. 80% of men arrested for child sex abuse possess child pornography, more than half featuring children under the age of 5. The demand for more extreme forms of violence also continues to increase. Two studies conducted in 2005 and 2010 reveal that 90% of the most popular porn downloads contain multiple instances of physical and verbal aggression and violence, all directed at women, who in turn give the appearance of enjoying it. And while 41% of the 304 scenes in one of the studies contained anal-to-mouth action, only 5% included vaginal sex. Still worse, of the results of a 2010 Google search for the term rape porn, 86% boasted the actual rape of girls under 18. 75% involved weapons, 43% included the realistic portrayals of drugged women, and 46% claimed incest. But if you're an amateur, a simple search for free porn today might take you here. Teen slave punishment, monster cock and tiny Asian teens. Ass-to-mouth orgy. Ghetto asshole fucked by white cock. The list is quite literally endless. This is just a small and mild sample of what pops up on the world's largest porn sites. FightTheNewDrug.org says the vast majority of pornography viewed by millions of people every day is teaching that humiliation and violence are a normal part of what sex is supposed to be. And studies show that the more socially normal one believes a behavior, the more likely they are to act upon it. We are raising a generation of boys and girls compelled to act out this false norm of sexual dominance and perversion, not to mention the unavoidable sexist racism. Pornography arouses viewers to mentally and physically engage with behaviors they would never dream of acting upon in real life. But after multiple exposures, what was once shocking becomes mundane. And the demand grows. Studies repeatedly show that people who view porn regularly are much more likely to pursue bought sex in real life. And as with any commodity, the lower the cost, the higher the profit, leading to inevitable exploitation of the most vulnerable. In fact, 80% of sex traffic survivors recall clients playing pornographic scenes for them to imitate. Pornography increases the demand for bought sex, which lays the groundwork for modern-day slavery. The pornography industry also contributes to the supply of sex trafficking. Sex traffic survivors report hours of forced pornography viewing as systematic desensitization, or so-called training, by their oppressors. Nearly half of survivors remember being forced or tricked into making pornographic film to shame them into submission. Today, it's estimated that at least 20% of current online porn footage depicts trafficked girls, and detecting it is nearly impossible. Consider the fact that the largest porn entry site in the world, which entertained 78 billion views in 2014, acts primarily as a hub, directing viewers to live-action camming sites and illegal tube sites, the most frequently viewed kind by men and women. Sites like these provide multiple platforms for traffickers to cash in on beautiful young lives without ever getting caught. Pornography drives and supplies the demand for sex trafficking. Finally, a growing amount of research considers the pornography industry itself a form of sex trafficking, calling it bought sex on camera. Interviews with porn performers look identical to those of trafficked survivors. They endure the actual enactment of sexual assault, so they are torn, gagged, bound, bruised, beaten, and verbally degraded while being penetrated and double penetrated in every way possible, often by multiple people in a single scene. This might explain the well-documented prevalence of drug abuse and addiction in the industry. Furthermore, the STD rate among porn performers is 10 times greater than that of the same demographic in the general population. Actors have unprotected and often anal and oral sex with so many partners in their short 4 to 6 month careers on average that it's impossible to keep up with the rate of infection. In addition, adult film actors suffer from drug overdose, depression, alcoholism, suicide, accidents, and homicide, giving them the highest death rate of any legal industry. Out of 1,500 performers followed from 2003 to 2014, 228 had died, not from natural causes. President Obama decries the growing human trafficking dilemma, and Lady Gaga musically protests sexual violence. But while we universally object to a porn-inspired rape culture, we accept and embrace the production and consumption of porn itself. 42 million people regularly engage with violent sex online. This absolutely contributes to the practice of selling people. As you can see here, the cycle of pornography, objectification, and bought sex includes sex trafficking. Participation at any point in this cycle contributes to it. Viewing pornography forces me to see people as objects. And just by watching, my clicks alone fuel the demand for more workers, more variety. But many people don't stop there. Physically masturbating along with porn associates what I see on the screen with sexual arousal. My imaginative mind engages with the activity, making me feel like I'm the one participating. This makes it more likely that I will pursue bought sex, maybe at a massage parlor where women and children are kept hidden by pimps and traffickers. The ability to tell who is there by choice and who is not evades me. And at this point, it might not matter because the porn I watch makes me believe that everyone loves what they're doing. My need for orgasm trumps reason. And the cycle continues, driving the demand. Alternatively, watching porn and seeing people as objects makes it more likely that I might develop an attraction to children, which increases the chance that I might abuse one. 95% of this nation's 1.5 million runaways experienced abuse and pornography exposure in the home, and 1/6 of them will succumb to the false promises of a prowling trafficker within 48 hours. And as I've stated, most of them will be forced to watch and perform sex online, supplying the demand. And the cycle begins again. Leo Tolstoy said that everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself. We are either a part of the solution or a part of the problem. There's no neutral when it comes to valuing each individual as a person who craves to be known and loved. Every pornographic download exploits somebody's child, mother, sister, brother, friend. Fellow human beings, inherently worthy of our respect. When we reduce a person to the sum of their body parts and eliminate the third dimension of their humanity, we uphold the same cultural mindset that drives sex slavery. By accepting the status quo, like Aristotle, and denying the causal relationship, like the tobacco companies, we also contribute to the slavery of 27 million people. If you still think your orgasm is worth the price being paid for it, which you're completely free to do, at least own it. Be aware. Don't be a hypocrite. Thank you.
Lipurani ngeno wapogwa eva tere ulikoni mondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno mweko tite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho tike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nene uto otukwetira o special angeza shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onareka kime bali heavy nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better.
We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Hello. So what is it really interesting? It is love in the age of porn. Interesting? Yeah, okay, okay. Let me begin by first asking you a few questions. Right? Have you ever been in love? Raise your hands. Raise your hands. Right, 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 right. Have you ever heard of or watched porn?
Yes.
Do you think they go hand in hand? Okay. Do you think they may interfere with each other? Yes, no? Okay, let us see. Let's see what we are talking about. So, we are talking about love, which is affection, sexual attraction, a romantic relationship. And a relationship is how two people interact with each other, behave and deal with each other. Whereas porn is an explicit display of sexual organs or sexual activity aimed at stimulating excitement. It's not about love or relationships. Most people begin to start watching porn out of curiosity, right? So, is this curiosity normal? Yeah. And if it is normal, should we have formal sexuality education? Or shall we... okay. Alright, so you don't want to leave it to life or nature. They will learn as they go by, right? Okay, let's see what happens in nature. In nature, Alan Dixon and various other researchers have found that the infant is taught sexual mounting behavior by the mother. I'm not saying that should happen in the human beings, but this is what is happening in nature, right? And as the child grows bigger, it indulges in what is called sociosexual play with its peers. And if either of these or both are interfered with, it interferes with its adult social as well as sexual behavior. It's a very important aspect of normal social and sexual development of the animal. What about human beings? Similar behavior has been seen. Children begin to explore themselves, genital exploration is normal from the first year of life. Children as young as 6 months old can experience orgasm, obviously without sexual imagery or thoughts. As they grow older, they indulge in what is called romantic sexual play. They play doctor, doctor, they play, you know, marry, home, home, and all that. And they also spy on adults and adolescents and young adults, and they imitate sexual behavior. Freud believed that early childhood and not puberty was the first critical period when brain maps about sexuality, relationship, and love were laid in our minds. As a child grows older and enters puberty, say this is the data from 5 to 13-year-olds, from Kinsey, and it shows that psychosocial and sexual play increases, more so in boys than in girls for whatever reasons, and they indulge in this kind of play with their peers. What would happen if this sexual curiosity was not satisfied, if they were not allowed to explore themselves or do any of these things? Then it is known that penetrative sex is not instinctive. And Dr. Shoiba and myself, we have had patients who come with infertility for 1 year, 2 years, no babies, Have you been having penetrative sex? What? They have been having what is called coitus bifemeris. That is Latin for sex between the thighs. Right? So penetrative sex is not instinctive. It has to be taught. It has to be seen or heard of. And we knew this since time immemorial. 25,000-year-old figurines, oil lamps from Rome depicting the coitus from the back, figurines from Pompeii excavations, our own Kama Sutra, our own temples where you find explicit sexual imagery of all kinds high up on the temple walls, where older children, young people can see them, not small toddlers. And then with the onset of printing press, we had the first book, which was banned because it was pornographic. It was popularly known as Fanny Hill, right? So these were all still images. What is the effect when the sexual imagery that I am watching is alive? It's real life, blood, flesh, people, real people doing it through a medium that can edit the images, that can expand it, that can do whatever it wants with it. Over to Dr. Schwaber for that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So the issue over here is when we're talking of pornography, I was sitting in this clinic, as Sangeeta was saying, and this gentleman came in, about 28-year-old man, and he sat down and said, I have a problem. Yes. I've been married 6 months and my wife can't satisfy me. Right. You know, I have erections only for 6 minutes. Actually, 2 to 5 minutes is a good time. No. Okay. How long do you think an erection should last? 40 to 45 minutes. Right. So, if you have an erection which is lasting for 45 minutes, either you're going to get a heart attack and die, or your penis is going to fall off. He didn't believe me. I said, have you been watching porn? So, that's my concern. I spoke to a urologist friend of mine after this and I said, are you having also these questions coming up? And he said, don't ask. In the last 6 months, when Viagra first came out, sildenafil, he said, I got 6 cases of guys who came in with erections which didn't go down after 6 hours. They couldn't pee, they were crying. They'd also gone and had hematomas in the penis because they were trying to do stuff which is not biologically possible. And they had to be hospitalized. Because they all thought that what they saw in porn was reality. And so that's my problem with porn. It's like Mission Impossible. Die Hard. In the bedroom. So, doesn't work. So my concern is over here that how do we make this work? My concerns with porn, and porn is here to stay, right? And if you look at kids and all, if you tell them don't watch porn, they go, what is porn? Doesn't work. So my concern is when people are watching porn, you're watching something that's not real. It's very exciting. It's full of curiosity. I really want to know this. Remember when you first saw it, you saw some naked pictures and you went, oh my God. Then that became passé and you went, oh, real sex. Man, this is real sex. And then you went a little further and said, oh, this is boring. Like, let's see something more and more. And after some time, you get desensitized. And pornography makers will keep giving you even more and more and more images to try and satisfy the desensitization. And after some time, that's your reality. And what you're doing in that, it's pure self-gratification. It's you and a screen. And normal sex is not a screen. It's two human beings talking with each other. They need to speak to another. They have to have emotional content. There's nothing like that. So after some time, you start getting isolated. Can you imagine? I don't need to go to college anymore. I can do online studies. I don't need to go to work to an office. I can work from home. I don't need to go to the market. I can get vegetables. I can get home furnishings. I can get everything. All of it online. And now, sex online too. So I have no ability to communicate with anybody. I get isolated. I'm stuck in that small space and I don't get a companion. I don't know how to communicate love, intimacy. not there. And this causes psychological dependence over a period of time, loss of libido, erectile dysfunction, depression, sense of isolation. All of it starts coming in and affecting me.
Right. So in this scenario, how can we develop a healthy attitude towards sex and sexuality? We have to keep in mind certain evolutionary aspects, evolutionary factors that have shaped our bodies and our behavior. Let's take a look. Right. So we are the one and only of monkey and ape species. There are 193 of them, and we are the only one that stood up, walks on 2 feet, lost its fur, and in the process became naked. Naked in the sense that our sexual organs and sexual signals, which are inherent in our bodies, because we are sexual beings, so we have inherent sexual messages in our bodies, they became very obvious. Equally curious is the fact that we cover up. Across all cultures, even in societies that wear minimal clothing, somehow genitals seem to be covered up. Why? We don't know exactly. But Dan Fessler of the University of California, he believes that social nudity would be a threat to the mating pair. We mate and we form a relationship for an extended period of time because our children take so long to grow up, 14 years before they can reproduce. And we share our parenting duties. So men and women live together. Also, we live in a city of 7 million people, right? And our life is not about just survival, reproduction, sex. That's something that plants and animals also do. We would like to create, we would like to invent, we would like to get a sense of fulfillment through that. In that context, covering up our sexual signals might help. So when we cover up, it's important to understand what it does to our sexual signaling. In the male body, when I put clothes, I increase the width of the shoulders and the height. These are the sexual signals inherent in the male body. In the female, it is a shape. And the shape, it's not the size, it's the shape. The shape can be completely obliterated or completely enhanced by clothing. So through clothing, a woman can alter her sexual signaling, but a man can't. It's only enhancement on the man's side, but on the female side, it's both, either. So, just like I communicate through my body language, I also use clothes to communicate, give a sense of my individuality, my identity, my sexuality. So when I'm clothing, when I'm choosing a dress, what is it that I want to draw attention to? And remember, we dress up to go out. It's not just me, myself, I like it, I'll wear it. No, you're dressing up and you're going out. So what do I want to emphasize? Is my height, as the size of my organs, the most important trait that I have? Is that what I want to use as a basis, something that I got by genetic lottery? I have nothing to do with it. Or do I want to bring into focus my qualities, my attitudes, my beliefs, my behavior? Something that I have put an effort into. What do I want to look for in a friend, in a mate? Think about it. Another thing to keep in mind is that all across cultures, we do sex in private. And it is believed that it is part of our self-preservation, avoiding danger, because rapid self-defense is not possible during the sexual act or during excretion. So we perform these functions in private. Other factors could be hiding from the alpha male, there could be fear, there could be jealousy, competition, what have you, power play. But the truth is that all across cultures, we do it in private. And in fact, this behavior is so universal that Darwin felt that the sense of shame arose to prevent us from performing our sexual and excretory functions in public and thereby protecting ourselves. Now, here it is important that shame is a sense, is a feeling of regret or guilt when you know that you have done something wrong. It's in the doing. It's not a body part. No child is born feeling ashamed of its body or genitals or whatever. No. Shame arises when I purposely, deliberately abuse or break the norms that I have myself accepted. Right? So shame is in a behavior and we need to put it there. We need to take it away from parts of the body, from, you know, shaming people by pulling off their clothes. No, the person who is pulling off the clothes is doing the shameful act. Not the person who has been disrobed. No, certainly not. In fact, exhibitionism and Marty Maclear is deriving pleasure from doing sex in public. Both of these are considered mental disorders. And they're also illegal. Yeah. That's over to Dr. Schäuber.
So, how do we ensure that we have a healthy sexuality? Because sexuality is a part of you. It's a major part of you. And to be able to enjoy that part, to be able to be enriched with that is essential. Now, children often, especially when we're younger, we often don't listen to what our adults tell us, but we often do what we watch them do. Now, learning about sexuality, unfortunately, should be from parents and teachers, which does not mean that children get ringside seats in the parents' bedroom. Let's get that clear. What children do need is to understand that there is something which is healthy sexuality. So as parents start with small children, the most important thing is naming the body parts. You say eyes, nose, belly button. You say penis, vagina, toes, knees. You use the words because they are part of the body and no part of the body has shame. Each part of the body has an important function which has to be taken care of and looked after. The other thing is, surprisingly, sexuality depends on your self-worth. And how did your self-worth start? Your self-worth starts because you like the body you have. What you see in porn is a lie. You know that guy with a, you know what, 1 foot long? I'm sorry, that's computer generated. And there's probably one guy in 200 million who has that, and that's why he's paid to act in that. And all of you go, oh my God, I don't have one that size. And they have women with huge breasts and you think that that's what it's meant to be, otherwise you're not. I'm sorry, that's not true. Your body, with its shape and size, is unique and perfect. And once you get aware of your body and understand it, that's when you can enjoy your body perfectly. And sex is always a transaction between two people. And there has to be respect in that, because only when you give respect do you have self-respect. So if somebody else, if your partner says no to sex, it means no. It doesn't mean keep on asking till the person does it. When a person says, I'll kiss, but I don't want anything further, that's it. It's your self-respect which says, don't ask again. It means when your relationship is not working and is breaking up, you don't have to get nasty and vicious towards the other person. It's like it broke up because we weren't meant for each other. Separate, move apart, find another person. There's a beautiful space where they say that never run after a boy or a girl because they are like the buses. There's always another one around the next corner. So please enjoy yourselves. Thank you so much.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, good evening to you. If you have just joined us, you know how we do on our Fridays where we intake information and we process the information that we're supposed to be taking in. And obviously, we're going to continue our conversation tomorrow at 1300 hours in the afternoon. And that will be Elizabeth's World. For me, the matriarch, I bid you guys farewell. I love you guys forever and a day. You are important to me. And I will definitely see you tomorrow. So au revoir, ciao ciao, bye bye, nashi cheke.